meeting of the Nevada State Environmental Commission on September 1st, 2021. Time is 9 a.m. Stephanie, would you please call the roll?
Morning, everybody. Chairman Forte?
Here.
Vice Chair Jason King?
Here.
Commissioner Casey Casey?
Here.
Commissioner Jennifer Ott? Commissioner Michael Vischer?
Here.
Commissioner Tony Wadley?
Here.
Commissioner Adam Sullivan?
Here.
Commissioner Catherine Landreth?
Here.
Commissioner Jocelyn Torres?
Here.
Commissioner Mark Turner? Counsel from the AG's office, Mr. Ian Carr.
Here. Good morning.
Good morning.
With that, I believe we do have a quorum. This meeting has been properly noticed. And before we begin, I just wanted to go through some general housekeeping items. For those of you who are participating virtually, you'll note that your microphone has been muted. However, you will still be able to provide comments. During the public comment period, if you're using the life-size app, use the raise hand feature to indicate you'd like to make a comment, and your microphone will be unmuted. If you are calling in by telephone, the last four digits of your phone number will be unmuted. It will be called out, and then we will unmute your microphone. In the interest of time, we do ask that you try not to repeat anything similar to what's already been heard, and to please keep your comments brief.
Very good. And were we expecting Jennifer or Mark today?
Jennifer showed up. Jennifer's up there.
Okay, great. All right, Jennifer Ott is present.
Yes.
Okay. All right, moving on with the agenda is the first public comment period. Agenda item number 2. And for this public comment period, I want to emphasize this would be for non-agendized items. Anybody wishing to bring something before the commission that is not on the agenda today may do so during this time. The commission will not act on this recommendations or suggestions presented in the comment period. But again, I want to open this up for non-agendized items for the first public comment period.
Commissioner, I believe that Casey keeps raising her hand, so
I'm
not sure if she's wanting to say something. It was our intent to leave the commissioner's microphones unmuted for the duration of the meeting. So.
Okay, and if you could just alert me to when somebody has their hand raised.
Yes.
I can't quite see all the way there. So.
Yes.
All right, Casey, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to notice you. I'm on, and I will be here. We do have the Caldwell Fire, moving likely into Nevada today, so I may have to break off and or be on the phone sometimes as we're trying to commit resources and keep everyone safe up there and start worrying about the Nevada side of the base of this fire. So just letting you know that I may be in and out, but I will be here as much as possible.
Absolutely, and we completely understand, Casey. Thank you. And for those today, just keep in your thoughts those men and women on the fire lines, on fighting fires in the western United States, including here close to home, as well as those people who have been impacted who have had to leave their homes and evacuate as we move forward today. All right. Anyone else with this first public comment period for non-agendized items? Anyone have a comment?
The person calling in with the number ending 1666, do you have a comment?
I do not. Sorry, if my hand is raised.
No, thank you.
Inadvertent.
calling in with 7970, do you have a comment?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes. Very good. Thanks. I think we have people now joining us from Las Vegas. Is that the room that's been set up down there? Okay. Very, very good.
Yes.
All right. Moving on to agenda item number 3, the approval of the June 9th, 2021 minutes. Do we have any questions, concerns, corrections to those minutes by the commissioner?
I guess I'm
anybody? Nobody has their hand raised? Mm-hmm. Stephanie, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll entertain a motion for approval of those minutes.
Mr. Chair, Catherine Landers, for the record, I would move approval of the minutes.
Okay, it's been moved by Catherine to approve the June 9th minutes. Is there a second?
No second.
Second by Mike. Any discussion? Very good. We'll consider the minutes approved. All right, moving on, I guess, to the main event here. Before we get started with agenda item number 4, it's come to my attention that there may have been some contact with various entities to commissioners on this board. I would like to ask at this time if they did have contact with an entity to please disclose that in the spirit of the open meeting law, that we disclose that at this time.
Chairman Porta, Jason King for the record. I'd like to disclose that I received an email and then had a subsequent Zoom call with Mr. Kyle Davis, Opinion Public Affairs, on behalf of Nevada Clean Cars. I'm not sure if I need to disclose this or not, but I will. I received an email and a support letter from Melissa Ramos, Policy Manager for the American Lung Association of Nevada, and it appeared that I was the only one that she sent it to. I don't know if she blind copied, and I don't see it in the packet, but it was a letter of support on behalf of Southern Nevada Health District, Division of Public and Behavioral Health, Nevada Minority Health and Equity Coalition, Nevada Public Health Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, Nevada Chapter, Nevada Nurses Association, Toro University, Nevada, PAM Rehabilitation Hospitals, Climate Psychiatry Alliance, and Pediatric Pulmonology. Again,
yeah.
I didn't see it in the packet, and I didn't see it was sent.
It didn't get sent to us.
And then I had a second one as well, an email and support letter from Jennifer Helfrich, Policy Manager for the Sears Organization on behalf of Brand Geek, Dignify Health, IKEA Retail U.S., JLL, Legacy Vacation Resorts, Lithium Nevada, Lyft, Patagonia, REI, Siemens, Reno Spa Owners Association, and Uber.
Did not receive that one directly to the secretary of email either.
So it came to me, and I don't know.
I received the same one.
You did?
Okay.
I did too.
Okay.
Okay. Anyone else? Catherine or?
Mr. Chair, yes. I had a direct contact with Kyle Davis. We had a brief conversation just the two of us on the line, where he offered to answer any questions I might have. And I have like a rather observation that contacted me, and I think many of them have sent through the agency, but not all. So would you like me to list the ones that I heard from either by email?
Yes, if you could, Catherine. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, the first was More Than Women for Ethical Government, Nevada Chapter, CHISPA Nevada, Nevada Conservation League, Washoe County Health District, Nevada Clean Air, or Clean Car Coalition, Plug-in America, the Southwest Energy Efficiency Project, Natural Resources Defense Council, Nevada Clean Air's Clean Cars Coalition, and Consumer Reports.
This is Jocelyn Torres for the record. I also did talk to Kyle Davis and then Nevada Conservation League. I think we've mentioned all of the letters that I received as well from the organizations, and then I saw multiple of them were in the public comment web portal.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Any other commissioners?
Yeah, this is...
Chairman. Oh, sorry, Tony. I'm sorry to step on you. This is Jennifer Ott. Did you want us to list if they've already been listed?
No. Okay. If you have any new entities that contacted you that weren't listed.
No new entities, but I was contacted by those that have already been listed. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Yeah, thank
you. Mr. Chairman, this is Tony Wasley. I didn't hear whether or not the list included consumer.org. I received an email yesterday, but I received all the other emails. I had one relatively brief phone conversation with Kyle Davis, who similarly offered to answer any questions that I might have.
Very good. Any other members? And I'd just like to ask at this time that no members were in conversation with any other board members after these contacts with these entities. Okay, I don't see anybody, which is good. Good. Okay, very good. I think we can move forward now with agenda item number 4. And I guess we will start with a presentation from the division.
Good morning, Chairman Porta, members of the commission. I'm Jeffrey Kinder, Deputy Administrator with the Nevada Division of Environmental Protection. With me this morning is Ivy Hatt, Department of Motor Vehicle Service Manager 3. As I'll note in our presentation today, NDEP and DMV share authorities in NRS 445B, and so we have worked together on the regulatory petition before you today. Also presenting today following this part of the presentation will be Dr. Danilo Dragoni, Chief of the Bureau of Air Quality Planning, and Sig Janarice, Supervisor of the Planning Branch for the Bureau of Air Quality Planning. I'd also like to take a quick moment and recognize another member of our air team, Joe Pereira, who has logistical duties today, who was also instrumental in the development of this regulatory petition, as well as Morgan Fran and Glenn Smith of DMV. Next slide, Joe. We have three parts to today's presentation. Those will include an introduction and presentation of the regulatory petition, which I will be giving with Ivy this morning. Following that will be Clean Cars Nevada implementation, compliance, and enforcement, discussing both the LEV and ZEV programs, which Danilo will cover, and then finally, an air quality and economic impacts and stakeholder engagement and public outreach, which Sig will cover. We have a lot of information to cover, so please feel free to ask for clarifications as we proceed today. I would suggest holding questions concerning the substance of these programs until after Danilo has had a chance to get his presentation, as he will be walking through these programs, implementation, compliance, and enforcement in detail. And after NDEP's presentation, we will hear from our state climate coordinator and our partner air quality agencies in both Clark and Washoe County, as well as several stakeholders and their perspective on today's regulatory petition. So next slide. So we'll begin with the first part of the presentation. So on June 22nd, 2020, Governor Sisolak announced the State of Nevada Climate Initiative, which included Clean Cars Nevada. Clean Cars Nevada evaluated the adoption of regulation to provide Nevadans with more choices for low and zero emission electric passenger cars and light duty trucks, beginning in calendar year 2024 with model year 2025 new vehicles. A little more detail on these two programs. So the low emission vehicle program, which we'll refer to today as the LEV program, and the zero emission vehicle program, which we'll refer to as the ZEV program throughout our presentation. The LEV program requires emission standards for new motor vehicles, while the ZEV program will require additional introduction of clean vehicle technology in Nevada. Again, Danilo will walk us through these programs in a bit more detail in a few slides. Presented here is the Clean Cars Nevada timeline to develop the regulatory petition. As I just noted, Governor Sisolak Sisolak announced Clean Cars Nevada on June 22, 2020. On that same day, NDEP presented to the Legislative Council Bureau an initial draft of regulation R093-20. On December 8th of last year, NDEP held a Clean Cars Nevada informal outreach kickoff webinar, and shortly thereafter, on January 5th of this year, NDEP, working with the LCB, presented the draft regulation. As Sig will walk us through later in the presentation, stakeholder engagement began in earnest on January 14th with a series of webinars, a listening session, and other events up through June of this year. Based on stakeholder engagement, revisions to the draft regulation were provided to the LCB, and a redraft of the regulation was presented on July 20th. With that, NDEP conducted a public workshop on July 28th. And based on those efforts and input from our stakeholders, we are presenting the regulatory petition that is here before you today for your consideration. I would also like to recognize the LCB and their efforts in working with us on the development of this regulatory petition. So why is NDEP with DMV bringing this regulatory petition before the SEC today? Nevada's air program through NRS 445B is required to achieve and maintain levels of air quality which will protect human health and safety, prevent injury to plant and animal life, prevent damage to property, and preserve the visibility and scenic, aesthetic, and historic values of our state. We do that work by addressing three types of pollutants: greenhouse gases, commonly referred to as GHGs, criteria air pollutants, those pollutants that have an established national or NAMBIAN air quality standard, and lastly, hazardous air pollutants, commonly referred to as HAPs. A major contributor of all three of these types of pollutants is the transportation sector. And as we will discuss in upcoming slides, Clean Cars Nevada will both address and result in a reduction of all three of these types of pollutants. On this slide, we present a little bit more detail on these three types of pollutants we see from the transportation sector. We will hear from Dr. Kristen Averett, the state's GHG. We'll hear from Dr. Kristen Averett our state's GHG emission reduction goals. The GHG pollutant we mainly see from transportation is carbon dioxide from the burning of fuels, but we also see methane, nitrous oxide, and fluorinated gases. For criteria air pollutants, again, we see many of the pollutants that have an associated air quality standard, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next slide. And lastly, we see a number of hazardous air pollutants as a result of the transportation sector, for example, formaldehyde. So a major issue of pollution from the transportation sector is the formation of ground-level ozone. Shown here depicted, ground-level ozone results from nitrous oxides and volatile organic compounds from the burning of fuels in our vehicles. With the addition of heat and sunlight, we get the formation of ground-level ozone. So as we see temperatures rise, plus we see emissions from more and more vehicles on our road, we're seeing higher levels of ozone. So later, we will hear from Clark and Washoe County air quality agencies what impact ozone is having in our urban areas. And just to put it in perspective, that is what we're working to prevent. That is a bad ozone day in Clark and Clark County. So where does our authority come from to adopt clean car standards? The Clean Air Act gives states two options when looking at new motor vehicle emission standards. They include the federal standards or the California standards. Those are our only choices as a state. So why would we consider California standards? First, federal standards can change when the administration changes, as we've seen in over the past several years. And secondly, California standards are often more stringent than federal standards, although many times the two standards are harmonized. That discussion pertains just to the LEV program. I will note there is currently no federal ZEV mandate at this time. If a state chooses to adopt California standards, commonly referred to as a Section 177 state, because that's the section under the Clean Air Act that authorizes this, two things must occur. First, the standards must be adopted identically. I will note there is some flexibility when it comes to onboarding provisions as you come into the program, and we'll talk about those a little later in our presentation. But when it comes to actual implementation beginning with model year 2025, Nevada's standards must be identical to California's. And secondly, the standards must be adopted at least 2 years before the commencement of the model year, and that's to allow auto manufacturers time to come into compliance with these programs. Lastly, Additionally, a waiver must be granted to California by the EPA for these emission standards, and we'll discuss that a little bit more in a couple slides. So this slide just summarizes the information presented on the last slide, and again, it's important to note, Nevada has two choices, federal standards or California standards. There can be no third vehicle as a result of adoption of these programs. And adoption of Clean Cars Nevada this year will allow the program to become effective for model year 2025 new motor vehicles. But these vehicles will begin to show up on Nevada dealer lots in early 2024. And so that's why you see the timeline in front of you to get us to that time in 2024. This slide shows the states that have adopted both LEV and ZEV programs, states that have adopted just the LEV program, and those states, including Nevada, that are currently working on adoption of LEV and ZEV programs. Currently, there are 15 states that have adopted both LEV and ZEV standards to meet their air quality challenges, with Minnesota being the most recent state, I believe, adopting last year. Two states have adopted just the LEV standard, but not the ZEV standard. And lastly, again, three states are working on adoption of both LEV and ZEV. Along with us, that includes Virginia and New Mexico. As of year 2018, California plus the Section 177 LEV states accounted for 36% of new vehicles. And California plus Section 177 ZEV states accounted for about 30% of the new vehicle market. These numbers were back in 2018, and other states have adopted, so I would imagine those numbers are even higher today. So we've discussed the federal Clean Air Act and its authority. Now let's discuss Nevada revised statutes and the authority to adopt clean car standards. NRS 445B760 gives the SEC the authority to prescribe standards of exhaust emissions from motor vehicles. Again, we do that in partnership with Nevada DMV. And as noted, those sections that we share authority in NRS 445B are specifically 700 through 845. Danilo will soon present what roles both agencies will take going forward with the implementation of these standards if adopted. And I would also note the regulatory petition requires the approval of the DMV director. That approval was received on August 4th, and I believe it was included in your board packets. So bear with me over the next several slides. We'll talk about the regulatory petition before you in a little bit of detail, touching on several of the key sections. And again, we'll discuss in more detail some of the key aspects as we go into Danilo's presentation, but this is a five-slide overview of what is in this regulation. This regulation, R093-20, will be placed in a new section in the NAC, NAC 445B900. This regulation provides definitions of what types of vehicles these programs apply to. Notes again that the program begins with model year 2025 new vehicles. Also provides for portions of the California Code of Regulation that will be adopted by reference. Again, our program beginning in model year 2025 must be identical with California's. We do that through both our regulation language here before you today, as well as the adopt by reference sections we're proposing. Many of these program requirements you'll see will be addressed by California through working with the vehicle manufacturers. For example, testing of the vehicles, that is done by California for all the Section 177 states. So many of the provisions are done with California and the vehicle manufacturers. And again, as I said, Danilo will detail what Nevada's role will be in that process. We have copies of the regulation here at our desk and also at the table for anyone wishing to see those sections of the California Code of Regulations. And finally, on this slide, the regulation prohibits, with some exemptions, vehicles not certified to the California emission standards. For the LEV program, compliance is applicable to specific vehicle types. As I mentioned, testing occurs for vehicle types for those to be certified and is based on a fleet average for manufacturers. For Nevada, compliance will mainly be determined through annual reporting and our review of those reports and any follow-up. On the next slide, it shows that additional program requirements will include warranty provisions, labelings, and recalls. For the ZEV program, compliance is determined based on credits from vehicles produced and delivered for sale in Nevada, and we'll term these credits program credits. So as Danilo speaks later today, again, it's not number of vehicles, it's number of credits that determines compliance. And that's the key point as we go through this presentation. As I mentioned earlier, there is some flexibility for the state to onboard with vehicle manufacturers as manufacturers work to meet these new requirements. For this type of onboarding, there are two additional types of credits, early action and initial. So just please keep in mind as we go through this, program credits, early action credits, initial credits. Our regulation before you today contemplates early action credits. That is, vehicle manufacturers can earn credits for model years 2022, 2023, and 2024 to meet their credit requirement that will exist in model year 2025. That is, as manufacturers introduce more clean vehicle technology to Nevada, they get credit for that as we look for compliance in model year 2025. That gets us more clean vehicles on the road sooner. Initial credits, which are based on vehicles produced and delivered for sale in California, these type of credits are not considered in our regulation today. And we'll talk a little bit more about these types of credits in coming slides. And finally, to wrap up these slides on the regulatory petition, the petition also gives us the right authority for civil penalties for noncompliance, although historically noncompliance has not been an issue for implementation of 11 ZEV programs, both in California and other 177 states. And finally, the final section of our regulatory petition states that we cannot enforce this until a federal waiver that was issued to California that was previously revoked under the last federal administration is reinstated or a new waiver is issued. That is, we cannot begin enforcing Clean Cars Nevada for model year 2025, which would occur in calendar year 2024, until the waiver is in place. I will note, in April this year, EPA began the process of either reinstating or reissuing that waiver. So we anticipate the waiver will be in place in time for us to enforce the provisions of this program. Now I'll spend a couple slides talking about California Code of Regulations and hopefully demystifying why we're adopting so many sections of the California Code of Regulations and how that works in relation to our regulatory petition. And again, we have copies of a full set of the CC&Rs here today for commissioners if they wish to review them. I will make one final note before walking through these. California's program has been around for many years. I believe it dates back to the early 1990s. So this is not a new program in California. California, however, has continued to work on this program over the years. And how they do that is they build upon previous regulations. So in many cases, you'll see us adopt many sections of the CC&R, some dating back to the 1990s. And that's because that's how the program was built by California. And a lot of those key implementation steps are in those series of sections. And that's why there's a number of sections we're adopting. So with that introduction, let's walk through some of the key provisions of the California Code of Regulations. And you'll see a parallel to our developed regulatory petition based on how their program is structured. So theirs begin, of course, with definitions. And then there a lot of the sections can be grouped into a large category called the Motor Vehicle Pollution Control Device sections. This section includes all the emission standards that we were discussing. It includes the test procedures. Again, this is how manufacturers demonstrate that their vehicles comply with these emission standards. It covers labeling. These vehicles must be labeled to show that they are certified to California standards. And they cover many other things like onboard diagnostic systems. Next slide shows, again, warranty requirements for manufacturers for these types of vehicles to make sure they continue to perform to those emission standards. Recall provisions. In the event that a class of vehicles is found not to meet the standards, there are recall provisions. Again, many of these requirements are handled by California through their California Air Resources Board, directly working with the vehicle manufacturers. And on the final slide of this section, again, we have reporting requirements, which will be received by the state of Nevada, and we will review these reports to see how vehicle manufacturers are complying with these requirements. And then many other specifications. One I just call out like vehicle fuel tanks. They're specifications for vehicle tanks. So again, just to wrap up this discussion, it's a very comprehensive program. Much of the early work is done by California working with vehicle manufacturers to set emission standards, to verify emission standards, to label the vehicles. And as Danilo will go through his presentation, he'll talk about specifically what the state of Nevada, NDEP, as well as DMV, will do to implement these programs. One final slide before I hand things over to Danilo. I wanted to give the commission a quick look into the future. As I mentioned, the regulation before you today is for adoption of Clean Cars Nevada for model year 2025. California is currently working on what is titled Advanced Clean Cars 2, which we begin for model year 2026 and beyond. This currently proposed regulation would progressively increase the number of zero-emission vehicles required, beginning in model year 2026 up to 2035, when 100% new vehicle sales would be zero-emission vehicles in California. NDEP is committed to revisit our Clean Cars Nevada regulation when California finalizes their program, and that would take place next year, which potentially need to complete by the end of next calendar year. So we expect to be back here with Clean Cars Nevada again next year to talk about the next California program. As I mentioned, let's revisit initial credits for just a second. So again, for onboarding, two types of credits, early action credits, which are included in our regulation, gets more vehicles on the road today, but now initial credits. These were not included in this rulemaking, but will be considered next year when California finalizes their rule. And the reason for that is there will be a steep increase in compliance requirement for the vehicle manufacturers as they look to get on that path to 2035. So we understand the need to balance reasonable onboarding for our vehicle manufacturers to meet that increased credit obligation, but we are also very aware of the very important need for tangible emission reductions, which requires more zero-emission vehicles on our road. So NDEP looks forward to a robust conversation on initial credits with our stakeholders next year for the potential adoption of California's Advanced Clean Cars 2 rulemaking. With that, I will turn things over to Danilo again to discuss more details, and both of us will be available at the end of Danilo's presentation to answer any questions the commission may have. So again, thank you to our partners at DMV, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. For the records, my name is Danilo Dragoni, Chief of the Bureau of Quality Planning with NDEP. We are now going to provide an overview on how the Clean Cars Nevada program will work on the ground. And we will do that by describing the implementation, compliance, and enforcement aspect of this proposed regulation. Next. As Jeff mentioned, Clean Cars Nevada is organized in two main programs, the Low Emission Vehicles Program, or LEV, and the Zero Emission Vehicle Program, or ZEV. We start now with the LEV program. The LEV program itself is organized in two different groups of regulations, one for criteria pollutants and hazardous pollutants, and the other for greenhouse gases. But the essence is that the LEV program requires vehicles, engine, and fleet to meet emission requirements that reduce criteria pollutants, hazardous air pollutants, and greenhouse gases. Next. The LEV program applies to specific categories of new vehicles and engines. These categories are defined by the vehicle's weight, number of passengers, and the purpose of the vehicles. Here are four categories with some examples. Passenger cars, light-duty trucks like the Toyota Tacoma, medium-duty passenger vehicles, and the medium-duty vehicles like the Dodge Ram 3500. The LEV program applies to all new motor vehicles in these categories and motor vehicles engine that are offered for sale or lease. These also include new vehicles sold to government agency, federal, state, or local for use in Nevada. Next. There are, of course, exceptions, the first one being used vehicles. This program does not apply to vehicles with 7,500 miles or more. Emergency vehicles and military tactical vehicles are excluded as well. Also, the regulation does not apply to vehicles sold by a dealer to another dealer, vehicles sold to be destroyed or for registration out of state, and it does not apply to vehicles exclusively for off-highway use. These are the main exceptions. There are a few more, and they are listed in the documentation in your packet. Next. So we mentioned that the LEV program aims to reduce emissions from vehicles. This is mainly achieved in two ways. One, by implementing exhaust emission standards, which reduce tailpipe emissions. Pollutants regulated in this way, for example, nitrogen oxides and carbon monoxide. Two, by implementing fleet average emission standards, which target overall emissions from a manufactured fleet. Pollutants regulated in this way are like greenhouse gases. There are also other standards, as Jeff already mentioned, that relate to emission reduction, like, for example, onboard diagnostic system requirements, warranties and recall, compliance credit, and labeling requirements. Next. So how does OTs work? When a new vehicle model is ready, car manufacturers need to apply for certification with the California Air Resources Board, known also as FARB. CAR perform extensive testing to verify if the new model meet the requirement of the lab program. If approved, if the model is approved, then it can be delivered for sale in all states that adopted the lab program. The certification comes in the form of a sticker on each car. The owner of the new vehicle then can go to the DMV and register the vehicle. DMV verifies that the vehicle belongs to the model that was certified by CARB and therefore can be sold in a lab state. Next. Compliance with the program is achieved at the car manufacturer level. Car manufacturer will provide annual report to NDP, and NDP will verify compliance with the vehicle's delivered for sale, emission fleet average, label, warranties, and other requirements. The regulation also provides the authority to both NDP and DMV to perform inspections of cars dealers. These are not mandatory inspections, and we expect that they might be performed by DMV during the regular inspection that they do already. Additional inspection might be performed in those situations where annual report or reporting from other lab state might suggest or indicate possible non-compliance. So that would be maybe a step that we might take in case we suspect or we have information about possible non-compliance. Next. As for compliance, enforcement is done at car manufacturer level. The Nevada revised statutes gives DMV the authority to issue penalty. So the proposed regulation provides the same mechanism. However, given the role of NDP in the compliance, we are expecting a strong coordination between the two agencies if the need of enforcement will arise. I would like to point out, however, that we are not aware of any enforcement action taken by California or any other of the lab states in the past 20 years of the program. I'd like also to point out that this framework, this enforcement framework described here, might evolve. Next. That was the lab program. We are now going to review implementation, compliance, and enforcement for the Zero Emission Vehicles Program, ZEV. Before we do that, I would like to go over a few definitions that will be used and repeated quite often in the next few slides. Zero Emission Vehicles, or ZEV, is a vehicle that produces zero exhaust emissions of any criteria pollutant, precursors, and greenhouse gases. There are two classes of ZEV, battery electric vehicles, BEV, which operate solely on batteries, and fuel cell electric vehicles, FCEV, fueled primarily by hydrogen. Then we have transitional zero emission vehicles, or TZEV, which are partial zero emission vehicles. There are two categories of those. They can be plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, PHEV. They operate with both an internal combustion engine and a battery. The battery can be recharged with an external source of electricity, hence plug-in. And then we have also TZEV that are hydrogen internal combustion engine vehicles. Next. So the ZEV program applies to two specific categories of new vehicles, passenger cars like the Renault Zoe depicted here, and light-duty trucks like the Ford F-150 light. Next. The compliance of the ZEV program, as Jeff mentioned, is based on credits. Each manufacturer must meet an annual credits requirement or threshold to be in compliance. This requirement is based on a percentage of the total vehicles delivered for sale in the state. This percentage, as the table is showing, has been increasing since the beginning of the California ZEV program, and it will be 22% when Nevada will join the program with model year 2025. As an example, if a car manufacturer delivers 10,000 vehicles for sale in Nevada, the required credits will be 22% of 10,000, which is 2,200 credits. For each TZEV and ZEV delivered for sale, the car manufacturer gains a specific number of credits. That depends on the model and the electric mileage. For example, a Tesla Model 3 brings four, which is a full battery electric vehicle, brings four credits. A Fiat 500e, which is a full battery electric vehicle, but with less mileage, will bring 1.5 credits. And the Ford Fusion Energy, which is a TZEV, it's a plug-in electric vehicle, will bring only, or will bring one, approximately 1.1 credits. What's important here, and that's what so Jeff mentioned already, is because how the credit system works. 22% does not mean that each car manufacturer will need to sell 22% of ZEV or TZEV. The actual percentage will be much lower, and it will depend on the type of ZEV and TZEV that the car manufacturer will bring to Nevada for sale. Next. Also, the regulation recognizes the car manufacturer comes in different sizes. While the main compliance principle that we just saw apply to everyone, the regulation established different requirements depending on the sale volumes of the manufacturer. And of course, these requirements are tighter and as the volume of the manufacturer increase and, you know, becomes a large volume manufacturer. Next. In the previous slide, we described how credits requirements are established and how credits are accrued. We now look at what happened or what could happen at the end of each model year. One, the car manufacturer delivered enough ZEV and TZEV to meet or exceed the credit requirement. That's the upper part of the slide. The excess credit can be there, can be then either banked for user, for future use in future years and or transferred to another manufacturer through the state market. Two, the car manufacturer does not meet the credit requirement and he has to fill the gap by acquiring credits to the same state market or enter a status of non-compliance. These are the two options for each model year. Next. So far, we have seen only two ways to accrue credits, by selling ZEV or NTZEV, or acquiring credits through the state market. As Jeff mentioned, there is a third way, which is not part of the California regulation, therefore comes with some flexibility, but has been used by other states to help manufacturers with the steeping credit requirement of the initial years of the ZEV program. These credits are what we call onboarding credits, and there are two types of onboarding credits. Early action credits and initial credits. Early action credits are credits earned by delivering for sale TZEV and ZEV vehicles in the years before the beginning of the program, when no compliance is required. These credits are also used to incentivize the early adoptions of the ZEV program in Nevada. Initial credits are credits assigned to each manufacturer at the beginning of the ZEV program. Their amount depends on the credit balance with the California ZEV program, but proportionally reduced to account for the difference in sale volume between the two states. Next. Later on, we'll discuss how the outreach and engagement with stakeholders help to define how the proposed regulation deals with early action and initial credit. However, here we are presenting what the regulation is proposing now. The regulation allows for early action credit for model year 22, 23, and 24, as long as the credits are accrued starting after January 1st, 2022. Early action credit can be used starting with model year 2025, right away, right after the beginning of the program, the starting of the program. Initial credits are allowed as well. They are calculated based on the California credit balance for 2025 and volume say and proportionally reduced by the volume sale recorded in 2024. However, we are allowing the use of this credit starting with model year 2026. If the new car program, Advanced Clean Cars 2, is approved and adopted by Nevada. Under this condition, we are expecting an even steeper credit requirement in 2026. However, as Jeff mentioned early on, Advanced Clean Cars 2 is not subject of today's approval, and we will need to be back here for approval next year, if so. Next. How will compliance work with the ZEV program? As for the LEV program, car manufacturer will report annually to NDEP. NDEP will verify compliance with delivery of ZEV and TZEV to Nevada, along with credit requirements and other requirements. The difference here is that CARB will provide and manage the credit and exchange system. This is something that CARB offers and has been offering to all ZEV states. And it's a system that has been tested and used by CARB and other states for the past several years. Next. Last, as for the LEV program, DMV has the statutory authority to issue penalties. So for the ZEV program as well, DMV is the agency that issues penalties. However, again, because of the role of the NDP with compliance, we are expecting a strong level of collaboration with the agency if and when any situation will require enforcement action. Again, however, as with the LEV program, we would like to point out that since the beginning of the California ZEV program in 2025, no enforcement actions were taken by California or any of the states that adopted ZEV. Once again, this framework might evolve in the future. With this, I'm concluding my presentation, and I think at this point, the suggestion is to take a quick break and see if there are questions by the commissioner.
Thank you, Gigrani. Do we have questions from any commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I have just a few.
Go ahead.
And to kind of span both your presentation, Jeff, and Danelle's, initially you said that I think there's 15 other states have adopted both California ZEV and LEV standards. Did you reach out to those states and see what the pros and cons were? And if so, what were they?
Yeah, so thank you, Commissioner King, for the question. That's a great question. We have been in contact with several of the other 177 states over the last 6-8 months to see how the program. I'll back up and say, we initially started with CARB, spent much time with CARB understanding the program, what CARB has to offer, how CARB manages the program. And then based on that, reached out to several of our other states, for example, Oregon, which was similar in size to us, although they were an early adopter, just to see how the implementation worked in their state. So we have learned a lot about how this program works and how it's implemented in other states. And so I think key takeaways from that is just the amount of communication between the states and the vehicle manufacturers, because this program directly impacts vehicle manufacturers. And a lot of it has to do with the reporting, staying current on the vehicle numbers coming into the state. But as Danilo mentioned, CARB does a lot of that as well. So I feel like our role will be, reviewing those reports, but also realizing that CARB is also performing a similar function and also manages the bank to demonstrate compliance with this program.
Was there any, I'm sorry, Jason King for the record, was there any state that said, oh man, I wish we would have never adopted those standards for this reason or this reason or this reason? Any response like that?
Yeah, again, thank you, Commissioner King. Jeff Kinder for the record, I missed that last time. We haven't heard any concerns of states that wish they hadn't adopted the program. We have, of course, heard from states, with challenges, with implementation of the program, but all programs have challenges. But we have not heard any states that wish they had not adopted this program.
Thank you. And kind of along those same lines, I think you said there was one state that only adopted either the LEV or the ZEV. I forget what you said. Do you understand or do you have any knowledge of why they adopted one and not the other?
Again, Commissioner King, thank you for the question. Jeff Kinder for the record. I don't know if we've reached out specifically to those two states. I know Washington State adopted just the LEV standard as a first step, but they have recently gone back and adopted the ZEV standard. So we know that state just took it in two parts. But I don't know any specifics about the two states that only have a LEV standard. But I would guess that would pertain more to what are their air quality challenges and what their air programs are trying to achieve with adoption of these types of vehicles.
Thank you. And if I may have one more question, Danilo, it just deals with initial credits. I kind of get a little confused, and I know it's complicated and hard to articulate. Is there any way you can kind of dumb it down a little bit more for me in terms of how that initial credit is going to be calculated?
Absolutely. Thanks for the question, Danilo Dragoni, for the record. So initial credit is like, you know, when you open a checking account with a bank and they give you, hey, you know, if you open a checking account with us, we're going to give you $500. So it's a number of credits allocated initially to each manufacturer. The way we're going to calculate them is by looking at what's the credit status of that specific manufacturer with the California banking system. So if that manufacturer has credits in their California bank, then we're going to take that number of credits and reduce it proportionally to take into account the difference in market size. So the proportional factor would be the Nevada sales for that manufacturer over the California sale for the same manufacturer. Most likely, actually, it would be definitely lower. And so let's say that manufacturer sells 50% deliver for sale, 50% of cars in Nevada compared to California, then the credits account that manufacturer has in California will be multiplied, will be reduced by 50% to provide, you know, some sort of a actual meaningful number of credits to be transferred to the Nevada banking system.
And that credit is based on that manufacturer's, I guess their credits in California on just for the year of 2025, or is it a cumulative of that?
It is a cumulative. So as long as that manufacturer has been exceeding their compliance requirement in California, it will accrue credits in the past year, you know, 2020, 21, 23. And so we get to 2025, well, that car manufacturer will have a specific amount of credits.
Thank you.
Sure.
That helps. And no more.
Other questions from the commissioners?
Mr. Chair, this is Catherine.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Thank you. I think I know the answer, but I just want you to spell this out. My understanding is that the EPA would require us, Nevada, to have the exact standards that California has in order to enjoy a waiver from EPA. But I noticed that we do have some differences in how we perceive that we would do the credit program. I'm guessing that means that the credit program is a part of EPA's scheme, and so we do not have to match California exactly.
Yeah, so Commissioner Landreth, Jeff Kinder for the record. Good question, and again, this credit discussion is very complex, and so we're happy to answer any questions. So in model year 2025, when Nevada steps into the program, compliance is demonstrated based on what's called program credits, and you're absolutely right. That has to be identical to California. Prior to model year 2025, as we're onboarding into the program, that's where we get the flexibility with these early action credits and initial credits to help our vehicle manufacturers meet that credit obligation. So that is outside the program up until model year 2025, then we're in the program.
Thank you. And then if I could just have a follow-up. This Clean Cars 2 that's coming up in California, would Nevada be required to also adopt that in order to maintain the waiver, assuming we get the waiver from EPA?
Yeah, thank you for the question again, Jeff Kinder, for the record. So again, California gets the waiver. So California approves their program, reaches out to EPA and gets the waiver, and then 177 states can join California's program. So Nevada would not receive a waiver, but need California to have a waiver in place. To your question about advanced clean cars too, next year Nevada will have a choice because our program will basically start in 2025 and go beyond. But if we don't adopt California at that point next year, we're going to have to make that decision between the two cars again. because we can either be federal or we can be California. We can't have our own program beyond 2025. So that's a good question.
Okay, thank you.
Mike, you have a question?
Yeah, Commissioner Bisher, for the record, a question with regards to the exception, and what is the origin of the 7,500 miles? Why was that chosen, and why is it not tied to a model year as well?
Daniel Dragoni, for the records, I believe that the 7,500 miles is tied to the same definition in the California Code of Regulation. I see Joe saying yes. That's good. And so that's I believe, the reason why we use the same definition. Again, to be to match what California prescribes for the regulation.
And just to follow up, but there's no model year that attaches with that, so either or type of thing. So it's strictly on mileage and not the model year.
Well, it would be still 2025 model years. So the program we start with model year 2025. So anything, any vehicles model year 2024 and older will not apply. We will not be part of this program.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Sure. Adam, yes.
Thank you. Adam Sullivan for the record. I have a question about the ZEV program transfer credits among different manufacturers. Can manufacturers exchange credits across state lines with other manufacturers to accomplish the credit requirements in one state?
Daniel Dragoni, for the records, in general, the market that we were referring to would be a state market.
Okay.
However, there are minor provisions which might allow, and I'm looking at Joe, I apologize, that might allow some transfer among states, but those are really minor provisions, and I believe they might go away with 2025. So the general market, the market that I was referring to, is an in-state market.
In-state
so,
market.
Yes.
Okay. That's
fine. That's the big bulk of what we are expecting in terms of transferring credits among manufacturers.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members?
Alflin Torres here online. I saw the sort of list of vehicles and the exemptions, like off-highway vehicles, were obviously not part of this equation. The one kind of gray area that I couldn't necessarily figure out and think maybe is tied to the weight of the vehicle was like RVs or campers that are obviously drivable, not the ones you tow. Where do those fit into this equation, or are those also exempted?
Daniel Dragoni, for the records, I believe that RVs as vehicles do not are not part of the are not regulated by these regulations.
Yeah, and Commissioner Torres, Jeff Kinder for the record, if I could add to that, as you mentioned, we didn't go into details of the definitions of vehicle types, but in many cases they are tied to the gross vehicle weight. So that would also draw a line between, say, a medium-duty truck and an RV.
Any other questions, Jocelyn?
No, that was all. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? I just have one kind of general question. Would it be a fair statement to make that, you know, Nevada has already been benefiting to some degree from California cars via people moving here to Nevada from California versus and or people purchasing, Nevadans purchasing California vehicles and, you know, having them titled here?
Yeah, so thank you, Chair Porta, Jeff Kinder for the record. I would say that is a fair statement, and especially given our proximity to California. I would also, you know, based on the vehicle market and the proximity between the two states, I do think that's fair. And plus, I would also mention, you know, at times the federal standards have been harmonized with the California standards. So, there's periods and times, model years, that would have met the same basic emission standards requirements as well.
All right, very good. Any other questions for the division before we move on to the stakeholders' presentation?
have one more portion of NDEP's presentation, and that would be Sig Jan Rice to talk about the stakeholder process.
Okay.
All right. Well, good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Sig Jan Rice. I'm an environmental scientist supervisor with the Bureau of Air Quality Planning. We wanted to turn now to the air quality benefits of our proposal, the economic impacts, and our stakeholder engagement and public outreach process. Next slide. Let's first start with a little overview of our Nevada state fleet. There are about 2 million light-duty vehicles registered in the state of Nevada, and the overwhelming majority, as you might imagine, are registered in Clark County, followed by Washoe County. We have sales of about 120,000 light-duty vehicles in the state, and that's averaged from 2015 through 2020, so about 120,000 sales. Passenger cars make up only about 35% of those sales. We're very much a truck-heavy state. Light-duty trucks and SUVs make up 65% of new registrations. Of new light-duty vehicle sales, about 3% now are ZEVs and TZEVs. That's actually pretty good. Many states are about 1% or 2%. So 3% is a pretty good number to start at when introducing a proposal such as this. Next slide. When we look at where new light-duty vehicles are being sold, again, the majority in Clark County, followed by Washoe County. So we see that the benefits of this program will most likely be felt in Clark County and Washoe County, where emissions benefits are needed. Next slide. So this slide, again, covers light-duty sales. And let me go over it. It's a little complicated. First of all, the gold line there represents vehicles sold corresponding to the scale on the right. So you see sales have dipped in the last couple of years, especially in 2020 as a result of COVID. The colored bars respond to different types of vehicles being sold and correspond to that scale on the left. So the blue bar represents internal combustion engine vehicle sales. The orange bar is battery electric vehicle sales. That's fully electric vehicles. And the gray bar at the very top, those are plug-in hybrid electric vehicle sales. So you see over the past few years, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles have stayed pretty much the same. But the battery electric vehicle sales have been steadily increasing. So if you add up the orange plus the gray bar, that makes up that 3% I just mentioned. Okay, next slide. So focusing on the benefits of the LEV program, we see that the LEV program will present air quality benefits. The LEV program provides an incremental decrease in fleet-wide internal combustion engine vehicle emissions. Also, in having the LEV program as part of what we are adopting will help maintain regulatory consistency for the auto manufacturers that are complying with the Section 177 state rules in other states. We see the emissions benefits as being, firstly, greenhouse gas emission reductions from the fleet-wide emission standard. That's how it works on the LEV side. It's a fleet-wide standard. We also see emissions benefits in reductions of nitrous oxides and fine particulate matter that will occur mainly from the decreased fuel combustion that's required from the LEV program. Next slide. We're talking about the ZEV program. The approach that we took was we created what we call the Nevada ZEV calculator. It's essentially, it's a spreadsheet, and it is based on the ZEV program rules, and it was populated with projected state sales data by manufacturer. And so we utilized the ZEV calculator to predict the emissions benefits and to predict how manufacturers would comply with the credits. So in the calculator, we ran a couple of different scenarios. We ran a business as usual scenario where there would be no program. We ran a minimum compliance scenario. So if the manufacturers just complied with the requirements and no more. And then we had what we call an anticipated compliance scenario that was based on the assumption that the ZEV program would start in model year 2025, that the ZEV program's requirements would remain the same through 2035, and that in addition to meeting minimum compliance, that the manufacturers would probably have higher ZEV and TZEV sales. And that was based on the trends and recent manufacturer announcements of fleet electrification. A number of the manufacturers, General Motors, Volvo, Ford has some major product announcements. They have made announcements of their plans to electrify their fleet. So we took that into consideration with our anticipated compliance scenario. Next slide. So we took those sales scenarios, and they're shown here on this chart. So with a business as usual sales projection in blue, you would have slowly increasing sales of ZEV and TZEV vehicles. With a minimum compliance scenario in orange, you would have what's depicted there. And then with the anticipated compliance scenario, you would have greater sales than is required for the minimum. We know that when manufacturers make an announcement of new electric vehicle offerings, they send those vehicles predominantly to the states that have adopted a ZEV rule. We want Nevada to be one of those states and receive those vehicles first. So we took these sales projections and then we used them to make estimates of emissions reductions. So let's move on to the next slide. So with CO2, annual emission avoidance, this slide shows as the model years roll out, the emission avoidance. So a business as usual scenario would be zero. The minimum compliance scenario, the orange line, and the anticipated compliance scenario in gray. And this is shown in metric tons per year. And the way this chart works is, starting with model year 2025, you would get the benefits of that first model year hitting the road. And then model year 2026, you would have the benefits of the new 2026 vehicles hitting the road, in addition to the 2025 vehicles still on the road, and so on. Next slide. Now turning to other harmful pollutants, this slide shows what are called non-methane organic gases plus nitrous oxides and the annual avoided emissions. Again, minimum compliance in the orange line, anticipated compliance in the gray. And this is particularly important to cities like Las Vegas, Clark County, where the non-methane organic gases plus NOx are what produce ozone. Next slide. So reviewing the benefits of the Clean Cars Nevada program versus remaining with a business as usual case, we see that the program would result in significant greenhouse gas reductions, which would help our state to achieve climate action goals. We see criteria pollutant reductions that would benefit non-attainment areas such as Clark County and also benefit public health. We also see that adoption would help to foster the widespread availability of new battery electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid vehicles in our marketplace, which just helps improve consumer choice. Next slide. So now turning to the economic impacts of ownership. Certainly, it's the consumers that really are going to play an important role here. And are they going to adopt these new vehicles, this new technology? There are a number of sources of information out there on this shift. And a lot has been written about this. So we've reviewed much of the literature that was out there from these four sources of information, but we tended to focus on the last two, consumer advocacy groups and government and academic research organizations. And when it comes to the economic impacts of ownership, four of the things that consumers are really looking at are, of course, the initial purchase cost of the vehicle, the depreciation of the vehicle, because you're always concerned about how much is my vehicle going to be worth a few years down the road when I go to trade it in, the fueling costs of that vehicle, and the maintenance and repair costs. Next slide. So we're looking at fueling costs and thinking about the switch to electricity. A recent research article looked at and estimated what's called the levelized cost of charging for every state in the country. And what do we mean by levelized cost? Levelized simply means if all the costs of charging are incorporated into that figure, what would it be? So not just the cost of electricity, but the cost of the charging infrastructure that will be passed on to consumers, the cost of taxation of electricity, and so on. And so when they did this, they found that Nevada at 11 cents per kilowatt hour was actually pretty low compared to other states across the country. So keep that low cost of electricity in mind when we move to the next slide. Nevada, along with other western West Coast states, has a pretty high cost for petroleum fuels. Gasoline and diesel fuels, pretty expensive here compared to the rest of the country. So when you're making that switch from petroleum fueling to electric fueling, those lifetime fuel cost savings are considerable. So in this study, they estimated lifetime fuel cost savings here, and so I think we're up in the $12,000 range. And in their research, they estimated the lifetime being a 200,000-mile lifetime for a vehicle. So this cost savings, we believe, is something that consumers will consider. It's a significant enough savings that it should be part of their consideration. Next slide, please. And so our key findings with respect to economic impacts of ownership are, first of all, right now, battery electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid vehicles are more expensive than a comparable internal combustion engine vehicle. No question about it. However, over the coming years, the initial purchase price will reach parity with internal combustion engine vehicles. And we expect that to happen in the next 5 to 7 years. And that's most likely to first happen with passenger cars and crossover SUVs. With pickup trucks, that'll probably take a little longer because of the greater power needs and the larger batteries in those vehicles. Secondly, we found that battery electric vehicles and the plug-in hybrid electric vehicles now hitting the market will depreciate at similar rates as internal combustion engine vehicles. So consumers don't have to worry that they're going to buy something that will be losing a lot of value. Thirdly, the maintenance and repair costs for battery electric vehicles and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles will be lower, considerably lower, when compared to internal combustion engine vehicles. These battery electric vehicles are just so much simpler mechanically than internal combustion engine vehicles. If you think about all the systems that are there to service an engine, from a cooling system to a fuel system to a transmission, battery electric vehicles simply don't have those. So this will be a considerable cost savings for consumers. And finally, going back to those two maps I showed you, given Nevada's higher average gasoline prices, the fuel cost savings for battery electric vehicles will be significant compared to ICE vehicles over the life of the vehicle. Next slide. So now turning to small business impacts. The statute requires us to assess the small business impacts of any regulation being proposed. Certainly, there will be impacts of this proposal to the auto manufacturers. They will have to change up their business. They will have to provide more electric vehicles to the state. They will have to report to us their compliance, but they are not small businesses. When we look at the small businesses in the state and how they might be impacted, this is a summary of the impacts we see. First of all, some dealers may qualify as small businesses, but dealers will see uncertainty over consumer acceptance of ZEVs and how to market and sell ZEVs, and possibly additional costs related to marketing. Dealers will also see a decline in revenue for maintenance of vehicles, as well as repair shops. Over time, there will be less maintenance of these ZEV vehicles. There will be capital costs for charging infrastructure, for new diagnostic equipment, and for updated training that will be required to service the zero-emission vehicles. And, of course, there will be a decline in fossil fuel sales that will not only impact fossil fuel providers, but any associated businesses such as convenience stores or fuel haulers. But we have determined that this proposed regulation would not impose a direct and significant economic burden on small businesses and would not directly restrict the formation, operation, or expansion of a small business. And what I'd like to underscore here is this transition to zero-emission vehicles, it's already underway. This proposal would simply enhance and accelerate a transition that is already occurring. Next slide. So now let's turn to our outreach series, webinar series that we undertook during an 8-month period beginning in December of last year. But really, before we started this webinar series, we were in discussions with the Nevada Franchise Auto Dealers Association, with environmental groups and others interested in this program. But we began our 8-month webinar series with an overview in December. That was followed by a listening session where we heard from our stakeholders, and they were allowed to present. I'll add here that we have been taking public comment on this proposal all throughout that 8-month webinar series. And we have compiled those comments and concerns. We have addressed those comments and concerns, and we have provided them to you in your packets. So we held a listening session to hear from stakeholders. That was followed by 2 technical sessions where we focused on the nuts and bolts of how the LEV program would work and then the ZEV program. That was followed by 2 sessions on air quality impacts, first covering those sales trends and the anticipated ZEV crediting that we went over, followed by what we anticipate the emissions benefits would be. That was followed by a session on the economic impacts of ownership and small business impacts that I just went over. We then, again, had another opportunity for stakeholders to come forward, make presentations on their take on our proposal. And then finally, we had a Spanish language presentation of our proposal in association with Chispa, Nevada, and I'll cover that on the next slide. So we were approached by Chispa, Nevada to have a Spanish language presentation on the proposal. Chispa, Nevada is a nonprofit organization that seeks to engage Latino communities with environmental issues. So we translated a group of slides, basically an overview of our program into Spanish. We held a webinar that was webcast in a simultaneous Spanish translation by a professional translator, and that was followed by a very engaging question and answer session. And that presentation and webinar is available on our website. Next slide. So throughout our outreach, what were the concerns that we heard from the different groups who were involved with this proposal? First of all, covering industry concerns and dealerships. What we heard from dealerships and from the Nevada Franchise Auto Dealers Association was, first of all, they're concerned about affordability of new vehicles. Price of new vehicles has been going up quite a bit in recent years, and they're worried that requiring that this new technology would impact affordability even further. They're also concerned about costs to dealerships for marketing and advertising costs and how consumers will accept these new vehicles. Then the automotive industry, the manufacturers, they're mainly concerned with that we have a seamless rollout of this program and that the regulation should be well written and the regulation would not turn into a third car requirement that I think we talked about earlier that is prohibited by the Clean Air Act. The automotive industry was also concerned that that we allow early action credits beginning in model year 2022. And the automotive industry also really wanted us to look at initial credits and to consider initial credits to help auto manufacturers meet that strict jump in requirements, especially for model year 2026 and beyond. Next slide. We heard from the petroleum industry. The petroleum industry, first of all, thought that climate action measures should not focus and single out a one particular industry, but should be more broad-based and market-based. They also expressed concerns over the life cycle and environmental issues related with the lithium-ion battery production. From mining the minerals to the production of batteries to recycling and final disposal of the batteries. There's also concern among petroleum marketers over the convenience store business model. As people will be changing their fueling habits, their charging habits, they may not be using convenience stores in the same way that they do right now to pick up a few extra items while they're fueling their cars. Next slide. We also heard from the environmental non-governmental organizations, and they, of course, wanted us to adopt a program that resulted in real emission reductions and not just something that looked good on paper. They also expressed concerns over the use of these initial credits and strongly discouraged their use because they would tend to water down the environmental benefits of the program. We also heard from environmental justice advocacy groups. They were concerned, they wanted the environmental benefits of this program to be realized in low-income and minority communities that bear a disproportionate burden of exposure to environmental pollutants. They also wanted the state to look for ways to assist low-income and minority communities in gaining access to new electric vehicles and the charging infrastructure that will be needed for those vehicles. Next slide. So among all the concerns that we heard, there really was one that became the chief concern, and that was this issue of initial credits. Again, the NGOs strongly discouraged use of initial credits because they would diminish the environmental benefits of the program. The electric vehicle manufacturers were also opposed to the use of initial credits, but the auto manufacturers strongly favored the use of these credits to ease the introduction of that sizable jump. And so after numerous discussions with all sides, a resolution was arrived at, and that resolution is that in the proposal before you, we have no provision for initial credits. However, we have committed to the auto manufacturer that should the state of California amend their regulations for 2026 and years beyond and strictly, increase the strictness of the requirements, we've committed to look at and seriously consider the use of initial credits in any subsequent rulemaking that we would bring for this commission. And that compromise satisfied all parties involved. Next slide. So after all those opportunities for public input and explaining what we were doing, we arrived at our public workshop. So our public workshop was held on July 28th of 2021. It was properly noticed and agendized, and we presented the text of the regulation. There were no questions or concerns raised on the text of the regulation itself. There was no opposition expressed to the Clean Cars Nevada program. Stakeholders instead expressed support for the program. And most importantly, the auto manufacturers, the auto dealers, and the environmental advocacy community are all in agreement that the program as presented here is a workable program and will result in meaningful environmental benefits. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Do we have any questions from our members? Or SIG?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, SIG, Jason King for the record. Just to be clear, earlier I'd asked the question about initial credits, and I believe I heard you just say that at least in these regulations before us today, that is not a part of the regulations.
That is correct. There is no provision for initial credits for this regulation you have before you.
But there was a concession made that down the road that was something that could be considered.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Catherine?
Is that Catherine?
Catherine?
Yeah, go ahead, Catherine.
I'm just curious. I don't know if you can answer this question, but how confident you and the staff are that low-income consumers who need this kind of transportation to get to work and maintain their lives, especially in cities that do not have good public transportation, that they will be able to have access to affordable electric vehicles, the ZEVs. And part of my question is, I know nothing about the longevity of the batteries of these cars, but I suspect that would be a sizable replacement cost. So I don't know if from California there's any experience in the used vehicle market for ZEVs, and if there's an anticipated concern about whether low-income people will be able to get affordable transportation.
SIG, this is Greg Lovato. If I could take that question. Hi, thanks, Commissioner Land, with Greg Lovato, NDP Administrator. So yes, we did hear that concern, and charging infrastructure, affordability, those are sort of parallel concerns that that NDP heard about from the start of this Clean Cars Nevada initiative throughout. And while we don't have the ability to directly address those concerns, we realize that they're important. And I think some of the presentation that will follow on here from our climate coordinator for the state, Dr. Kristen Averett, will explain how broadly the state of Nevada in its climate initiative and in activities and legislation coming from the legislature this year, as well as plans that will be presented to the Public Utilities Commission by electric utilities, will begin to address those concerns in parallel. Keep in mind, we do have a few years here for some of these programs to take hold and to be reinforced. But it's a real concern, and I think as we look at not only this first step of introducing clean cars regulation to Nevada, the LEVZEV programs, but even more so as we look at future years where you're trying to, increase more aggressively, those are issues that will have to be dealt with in parallel. And so I think, you know, we do have some information that, like I said, Dr. Averitt will present on shortly to let you know how the state is planning to address those concerns. But it is something we'll have to stay coordinated on and is an important consideration.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that.
And if I might just add, Mr. Chairman, to your concern, Commissioner, about used vehicles. Certainly, low-income communities are likely to purchase used vehicles. And the longevity of these batteries in these vehicles, that is a concern. And what the state of California is likely to propose in their next rulemaking is that there will be a requirement that there be a kind of metric that goes along with a used vehicle that measures the health and longevity of the battery in a vehicle that maybe is 5 years old. And that would be something useful to a consumer to look at, just like they look at mileage on a car. They could look at that metric and say, oh, this battery has so much life left in it. So those considerations are being thought of.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Other questions from our members?
Chairman, I've got one question.
Sure.
Mike Vischer, for the record, SIG, did you get any comments from some of the rural dealerships that were different from Clark County?
I do not believe that we got any comments specifically from rural dealerships, and I will turn to my colleagues to see if they remember us getting any.
Danilo Dragoni, for the records, we did not receive specific comments from single dealers from rural counties.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any other questions? I had one or two for SIG, since you're the emissions guy at DEP. Zero emissions vehicles, sure, the emissions from the vehicle are zero, but when they plug the vehicle in, the emissions are not zero. Were there any, and I'm sure you've had this question before, what is the basic, you know, emission offset, if you will, between a ZEV and, you know, and a standard combustion engine?
So, Mr. Chairman, I think what you're referring to are really like the life cycle emissions when looking at the big picture, because you're going to plug your electric vehicle in and it's going to be charged by electricity that was generated where? Coal-fired power plant, a gas-fired power plant, maybe solar or wind. I believe, and I'm going to have Joe, our expert, weigh in here, but we considered those when we did our emissions calculation. So those upstream emissions, we considered those. But as to your question on what's the direct comparison, I don't have a good answer. Joe, or one of my other colleagues?
Well, Sig, that was getting to the second part of my question. Were those long-term impacts put into your chart that you presented here today and those emission reductions based on what actual emissions over the life of a ZEV would be and how much emissions would be reduced?
I can probably respond to that.
We included those upstream emissions based on Nevada's profile.
I can, if Daniel Dragoni for records, I can maybe go into a little bit of a specific. So when we did our ZEV calculator, and in the plot, in the graph that we display, especially for the greenhouse gases reduction, we did include the impact of charging the electric vehicles. We didn't include emissions, for instance, from digging lithium or emission from producing batteries, because those are very hard to quantify. Mm-hmm. We do believe that, of course, there are emissions because of that, but the recent studies are showing that, in general, on the life cycle of an electric car, emissions are much less compared to the an internal combustion engine vehicles. Where most of the difference is also made is on charging the vehicles and on the profile of the electricity that is used for charging the vehicles. And as we know, through the adoptions of renewable in Nevada, that profile is moving to be less and less compared, like, for instance, for other states.
Okay. Because y'all did those calculations for ZEVs for the cost of fuel, and just wanted to make sure that those same type of approaches for these emission reductions were used as well. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the members for DEP? Dan, do we have any more presentations from the division?
No.
Okay. We've been at this about an hour and a half. What is the wishes of the commission? You want to take a quick break? You want to start into the stakeholders meeting or presentation? We good?
I'm good.
Okay. Well, let's go for at least another 30 minutes or so, and then we'll decide then. Thank you. All right. Who will be our first stakeholder to present?
Chairman Porter, I believe Dr. Kristen Abert will be the next presenter.
Okay, very good.
And commissioners, we do have her presentation in the Clean Cars fact sheet that is there amongst all your people, and that's what she'll be doing.
Okay, and participating online?
She is online.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Sorry, it took a moment to unmute my microphone. So good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Kristen Averett, State Climate Policy Coordinator for the record. So I'm here today to support NDEP by providing some perspective on how this rulemaking really fits within the context of our state's climate agenda, the Nevada Climate Initiative, as well as the broader need as it relates to climate change. So in your materials, and what you'll see up on your screen right now, you have a fact sheet called Clean Cars Nevada in Context. And I want to take this opportunity to hit on some of the key points in that document, but also, again, convey the importance in the broader context of climate change. So 3 weeks ago, a new report on the state of the climate was released by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. They are the Nobel Prize-winning preeminent scientific authority on all things climate. And that report indicates that we have an opportunity to limit global warming to 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit if we can reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions in the next 20 years. Right now, we've already realized 2 degrees Fahrenheit of that 2.7 degrees of warming. And make no mistake, rising temperatures are driving the increasing intensity, severity, frequency, and duration of wildfires, droughts, and floods across the entire western United States. The impacts of climate change are not just happening in our backyard right now, but they have literally arrived on our very front doorsteps. Need I look any further than the Reno-Tahoe region right now? But even if, and hopefully when, we do get to zero emissions, we still have an additional 0.7 degrees Fahrenheit or 1 degree of warming coming at us. And of course, we are doing everything we can to ensure that we are prepared to deal with further impacts from climate change. But in the meantime, it's imperative that every level of governance, federal, regional, state, tribal, and municipal, are all taking action to reach net zero emissions. And we need to do this as soon as possible, so we can improve the long-term environmental security for future generations. Already, Nevada has taken action. In 2019, the state legislature passed SB 254, which set greenhouse gas emissions goals for Nevada, a 28% reduction by 2025, 45% reduction by 2023, and net zero emissions by 2050. However, according to the 2020 NDEP greenhouse gas inventory, under the current policies and regulations in place, we will fall short of these targets, missing the 2030 goal by 19% and falling well short of the net zero emissions by 2050. Consequently, new programs, policies, regulations, and investments must be made so our state can meet these targets. Recognizing the need for a plan to address climate change in Nevada, Governor Sisolak issued Executive Order 22, calling for the development of a state climate strategy. That strategy was released to the public on December 1st of 2020. Today, in Nevada, the transportation sector is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, representing 36% of our total inventory. This is largely driven by the tailpipe emissions from cars and trucks using combustion engines that are traveling on our roads. The state climate strategy outlines many tactics that can be used to reduce transportation-related greenhouse gas emissions. These include reducing vehicle miles traveled by bolstering mass transit opportunities, developing incentive programs that will remove old, polluting cars from roadways, adopting low-carbon fuel standards, shifting the transportation sector off fossil fuels towards electrification, use of hydrogen, and other zero-emission options, and, of course, adopting low- and zero-emission vehicle standards for cars and trucks. However, no individual policy or regulation can operate to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in isolation. Each of these options will require different authorizing entities and agencies to develop and implement a portfolio of synergistic policies, programs, and investments that support our net zero goal. This holds true for the adoption of a statewide clean car standard. Indeed, increasing the relative proportion of low and zero emissions has the potential to both reduce greenhouse gas emissions and improve air quality. But as we outlined in the state climate strategy, a transition away from conventional vehicles to electric vehicles in particular will require a suite of actions beyond implementing a LEVSET regulation. As articulated by stakeholders engaged in the Clean Cars Nevada rulemaking process, considerations for all, such as accessibility and affordability of electric vehicles and charging infrastructure, is paramount. Recognizing the need to move forward on multiple fronts, Nevada is already taking action to support the increased demand for electric vehicles, including the expansion of much-needed charging infrastructure. Current examples and projects that are underway. First, the Nevada Electric Highway Program. This provides charging infrastructure across five of Nevada's major highways. The second, the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Demonstration Program. This is a $15 million incentive program that provides charging infrastructure for single, multifamily, and low-income housing, commercial, and government locations, as well as funding for electric school buses. The Economic Recovery Transportation Electrification Plan. This was authorized by SB 448, which passed in the last legislative session. And this is a $100 million investment that will accelerate transportation electrification in Nevada by installing even more interstate and urban charging depots, public agency charging stations, chargers to support tourism, as well as supporting transit and school bus programs. And of particular note, 40% of this infrastructure must be installed in historically underserved communities. SB 448 also enables and requires NV Energy to develop a long-term comprehensive plan aimed at expanding transportation electrification in Nevada with a wide range of programs, incentives, and rate designs. And this plan must be filed with Public Utilities Commission 1 year from today. So to round this out, adoption of a clean car standard is not the only step necessary to significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions for passenger vehicles. However, it is a very important keystone regulation that is absolutely necessary to support a transition to transportation electrification and to help our state ultimately reach net zero emissions goals, our net zero emission goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from our members? Seeing none, thank you. All right. Who will be next?
Chairman Porta, I believe we're going next to Marcy Hinson, who's Director of Clark County Environment and Sustainability.
Good morning, Chairman Porta and members of the Commission. Thank you for having us here today to speak enthusiastically in support of the rulemaking that's in front of you today. My name is Marcy Hinson. I'm the Director of the Clark County Department of Environment and Sustainability. We serve as Clark County's Air Pollution Control Agency, and we also have responsibilities for climate planning and action for here in Southern Nevada. Next slide, please. So to give you a little bit of context and background on why the proposed rulemaking in front of you today is important to us, it will be critical that vehicle emissions are reduced in a variety of different manners, and you've heard some context and background on all of those different actions that need to occur going forward, both for criteria pollutants considered under the Clean Air Act, primarily ozone and PM2.5, and then also greenhouse gas emissions for goals both at the state level and at the local level here in Clark County. So for ozone in particular, the Las Vegas Valley is designated as marginal nonattainment for the 2015 ozone standard, and a portion of the county is identified as a maintenance area for the 1997 standard. But barring action either at the federal or state level to reduce vehicle emissions, it will be increasingly difficult for Clark County to improve ozone levels here in Southern Nevada or to come into attainment for the ozone standard from 2015. The same for particulate matter. While we are a maintenance area for PM2.5, we're in attainment, but we know from actions that the EPA is taking and from scientific analysis and advice that they're getting from internal to their organization, it's likely we'll see a reduction in the PM2.5 standard. And so, again, influencing PM2.5 emissions from the rulemaking that's in front of you today is paramount in Clark County being able to improve both these pollutants and also meet attainment and maintain attainment for air quality standards at the federal level. Next slide. So some context on vehicle emission impacts in Clark County. As you've heard repeatedly this morning, transportation sector is the largest contributor of greenhouse gas emissions in Nevada. Clark County is a significant contributor to those overall Nevada numbers, as we know. 60% of light-duty vehicles registered in Nevada are in Clark County, and the transportation sector accounted for 36% of Clark County's 2019 greenhouse gas emissions, with passenger vehicles making up 50% of them. On-road mobile sources, trucks, buses, passenger vehicles, et cetera, accounted for 39% of ozone and 7% of 2.5 emissions from 2017 data. So the action that you're considering today will have direct positive impacts on our ability to reduce those emissions, come into compliance from a Clean Air Act perspective, and meet greenhouse gas reduction goals. Next slide. So in terms of the amount of impact, so as you can see, by sector, 36% of transportation in general and that sector is influencing our greenhouse gas emissions, and 49% of that is from passenger vehicles. So the action you're considering today is going to have a direct positive benefit for Clark County and our residents. Next slide. For ozone precursors, such as NOx and VOCs, again, we see that mobile on-road sources for NOx make up 39%, and then 21% for VOCs. So these are the two principal components that work to create ozone, as you saw in Jeff's presentation earlier this morning. Next slide. PM2.5 emissions by source, so mobile on-road, that is 7% here in Southern Nevada based on 2017 data. Next slide. So our need for electric vehicles, not to repeat too much, but we are looking here in Southern Nevada in order to improve air quality and meet greenhouse gas emissions both at the local level and contribute to the state's goals, we have to electrify transportation here in Southern Nevada. Because passenger vehicles are our principal at this time component of transportation, it's important that vehicle emissions are heavily influenced downward. As a local pollution control agency, we actually don't have authority for vehicle emissions. We can influence policy and we can support policies, but that needs to happen either at the federal level or through this allowances made in the Clean Air Act for state emission standards. And what NDEP is proposing to be adopted today for the California standards that can apply and influence these emissions. Without this action, Clark County actually has very little direct regulatory authority, and so we're really relying on either that cooperative federalism that's contemplated in the Clean Air Act or what's allowed for in the Clean Air Act through state action. So we're very supportive of what NDEP's proposing today. So electric vehicles also obviously have less emissions per miles driven than internal combustion engines. And as we continue to see more renewable sources added to the grid and supply of electricity, that gets to that overall emission reduction that one of the commissioners was asking about earlier. Passenger vehicles in the county make up the equivalent of 12% of Nevada's greenhouse gas inventory from 2016. And so as the point's been made, we need to see that number being influenced. those emissions being driven downward so that we can meet these GHG targets. And anything we can do to accelerate vehicle fleet turnover to improve emissions from tailpipes is going to help those long-term greenhouse gas emission goals. Next slide. So just to summarize, significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and pollutant criteria here in Southern Nevada are expected from this rulemaking. It'll improve our compliance with the Clean Air Act. It'll help us meet our climate action goals, and it'll reduce overall vehicle emissions, provide cleaner air, better health and environment for all Clark County residents. Next slide. So, again, it'll put us on a path to cleaner air in Southern Nevada, and we provide our full endorsement. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Any questions from attendees? Seeing none, thank you.
Chairman Porta, we would next move on to Francisco Vega, who's the Director of the Air Quality Management Division at Washoe County Health District.
Perfect. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thanks, Jed, and thank you, Chair Porta, members of the Commission, for the record, Francisco Vega, Director of the Washoe County Air Quality Management Division. Next slide, please. Just a little background on who the Air Quality Management Division is and what we do. We implement clean air solutions that protect the quality of life for the citizens of Reno, Sparks, and Washoe County through community partnerships along with programs and services such as air monitoring, permitting and compliance, planning, and public education. Next slide, please. The table in front of you, what you'll see is Washoe County's current status in attaining the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And similar to what you heard from Clark County, the biggest issue we're currently having is attaining that ozone standard. And the reason we say that is even putting wildfires aside, in 2019 we had one of our cleanest years we've had in quite some time. And even in that year, we still had significant trouble attaining the current National Ambient Air Quality Standards. In addition, the current ozone standard is being reviewed by EPA, and we anticipate it being reduced sometime in the near future as well. So, again, the biggest thing to take away from this slide is that ozone standard and our issues in. Next slide, please. Here's a little bit more of a historical look at where Washoe County has fallen in regards to ozone. As you can see, despite the kind of drop there between 2011 and 2014, we have historically been above the current air quality standard for ozone. And again, focusing on that 2019 calendar year, you can see that even with that clean year, we had significant difficulty attaining that standard. We can't anticipate this standard being reduced in the near future as well. Next slide, please. Also, a concern in Washoe County is PM2.5. And while the transportation sector contributes less to the pollution of PM2.5, it does contribute a significant amount. And as you can see, we still have the issue in complying with that standard as well. And as Ms. Hinson from Clark County mentioned, we anticipate this standard being reduced as well. Next slide, please. So, summarizing the emissions from the transportation sector here in Washoe County, historically, and it will continue to be the largest category of ozone precursor emissions in the county. Specifically, and as you can see from the pie chart there to the right, on-road mobile sources from the transportation sector contributes almost 60% of ozone formation emissions. Also, you can see there are pie charts in regards to PM2.5 and VOC, which also contribute to the attainment of the NAAQS as well. Next slide, please. Getting to the benefits of clean cars and With this document, Clean Cars Nevada was told significant reductions in criteria pollutants that contribute to the formation of ozone. Obviously, this benefits anybody who's in non-cleaning, and just in general, making sure that the health of the public is being protected. Clean Cars Nevada will help foster more widespread availability of electric vehicles, and obviously, this helps in improve consumer choice. And you can see from the chart to the right there, I think Sig touched on this as well, but the reduction of criteria pollutants associated with clean cars and that. Next slide, please. In summary, and again, I already touched on it, but current ambient air quality monitoring data indicates that Washoe County is in violation of national air quality, specifically for ozone, PM2.5, and PM10. The transportation sector is the highest contributor of emissions leading to the formation of ozone. Any strategy aimed at attaining the NAAQS must include reduction of emissions associated with the transportation sector. As the county does not have the authority to set vehicle standards, we must rely on state and federal actions to reduce emissions from the transportation sector. Adopting clean carbon mandates is critical to attaining the NAAQS and protecting the health and quality of life for the residents of Washoe County. In conclusion, the Washoe County Air Quality Management Division is in support of the Clean Cars Nevada Initiative. Permanent regulatory petition RDL93-20 and the proposed changes to the NHC 405B to include lead and zinc standards. And with that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Vega? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Chairman Porta, our next presenter would be Melissa Ramos. Melissa is manager of the Advocacy and Clean Air for American Lung Association in Nevada.
Thank you, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Melissa Ramos, and I do advocacy work for the American Lung Association. Just going to wait for the slides to pop up here. All right, thank you. Next slide. So I'd like to open up by sharing that various health and medical organizations across the state have expressed their support for the Clean Cars Nevada program. And here's kind of all the signatures from our letter that we submitted. So we understand how air pollution threatens public health, and implementing stronger emission standards is going to reduce the criteria air pollutants that contribute to our ozone and particle challenges, as well as cut greenhouse gas emissions that drive climate change health effects. And it will ensure that Nevadans benefit from the transition to zero emission technologies. Next slide, please. Every year, the American Lung Association issues a State of the Air Report, which is essentially a national air quality report card, which helps individuals and families learn about their local air quality. So we use U.S. EPA quality assured data by county, and we measure both ozone and particle pollution levels, which are two of the most widespread common air pollutants. So this year's report found that 4 in 10 Americans are living with unhealthy air. So while we've made progress across the country to improve air quality, climate change continues to make air pollution worse. And this includes the record-breaking spikes in particle pollution, largely due to the wildfires we've been seeing, changing climate patterns, which also fuel wildfires, and just driving warmer temperatures that leads to the more ground-level ozone formation. So poor air quality threatens everyone, but especially at-risk groups, including people of color, who are 61% more likely to live in a county with unhealthy air than white people, and 3 times more likely to live in a county that fails on all 3 air quality grades for ozone, short-term particle pollution, and annual particle pollution levels. Next slide, please. So when air pollution levels are high, it irritates airways, causing lung inflammation and other, and can damage multiple body systems. So many people experience breathing problems such as chest tightness, coughing, shortness of breath, often within hours of exposure. Even young, healthy adults may experience respiratory symptoms and decreased lung function. Other breathing problems tied to air pollution exposure includes worsened asthma attacks and cardiovascular disease, including heart attacks and strokes. It also increases susceptibility to respiratory infections, such as pneumonia, resulting in increased likelihood of emergency room visits and hospitalization. Next slide, please. In Nevada, approximately 2.9 million residents are impacted by unhealthy air, but the negative health impacts associated with breathing and air pollution is heightened for some of our most vulnerable populations. So right here, we have the breakdown of these different groups who are more at risk from air pollution, which includes children, seniors, people of color, low-income families, and anyone with underlying health conditions. And these numbers are specific to Nevada's population. Next slide, please. So while Nevada faced fewer unhealthy ozone and particle pollution days compared to last year, there is still more work to be done to ensure that all communities can breathe clean and healthy air. Our 2021 State of the Air report highlights that across the board, no county is immune from experiencing unhealthy air days, with certain seasons having higher levels of ozone and particulate matter. Our air quality rankings still remain high among the top 25 most polluted cities for ozone and short-term particles. This year, Las Vegas ranked 12th most ozone polluted and 25th most polluted for unhealthy spikes in short-term particles. The Reno-Carson area also moved up to 21st for unhealthy spikes in particle pollution compared to 23rd from last year's report. Next slide, please. Transportation emissions are the largest source of our ozone challenges, and greater LEV and ZEV deployment under the Clean Cars program will help us reduce emissions and protect public health from the negative impact of air pollution. The American Lung Association also has another report called Road to Clean Air, and this essentially highlights the benefits of a nationwide transition towards complete transportation electrification. Too many communities across the country are dealing with excessive doses of dangerous pollution from highways and trucking corridors, warehouses, and other pollution hotspots. Low-income communities and many communities of color too often bear the brunt of these transportation pollution burdens. So we can't ensure clean air and a livable climate for all Americans without addressing transportation. Our report uses a scenario where 100% of new vehicle sales by 2040 and heavy-duty truck sales by 2045 are completely electric, with additional heavy-duty vehicle classes advancing along the way. So our findings reveal that pollution reduced in the year 2050 alone could yield up to 6,300 avoided deaths annually, 93,300 avoided asthma attacks, 416,000 avoided lost work days, and many additional health impacts avoided. These health benefits exceed about $72 billion, with every state also including their own benefits and reductions in 2050 alone. Next slide, please. So supporting the transition to a zero-emission transportation sector in Nevada could yield nearly $745 million in public health savings. This means less missed days of work in school and less of a financial strain of medical costs due to hospitalizations and trips to the ER. The American Lung Association and other health partners continue to support Clean Cars Nevada and encourage the statewide shift towards electrification to unlock these major health and climate benefits. The Clean Cars Nevada program will implement health protective measures, air quality standards, to safeguard Nevada residents from harmful tailpipe pollution while expanding the market locally for zero-emission cars. I'd like to encourage our commission to support these regulations to make the clean air benefits a reality by tackling our transportation pollution challenge. So the Road to Clean Air report highlights what is possible if immediate actions are taken to support the transition to zero-emission transportation sector and target solutions to ensure that all communities and people benefit beginning today into the future. And with that, I'm ready to take any questions. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Ms. Ramos? All right, seeing none, thank you. Go ahead.
Chairman Porta, we would now move to Stephen Douglas. Stephen is Vice President of Energy and Environment for the Alliance for Automotive Innovation.
Good Good morning, Chair Porter, member of the commission. I'm Steve Douglas with the Alaska Automotive Innovation, representing car companies that produce 98% of the new vehicles sold in Nevada. Our 38 members also include the world's leading automotive Tier 1 suppliers, technology companies, and other value chain partners. For my part, I've spent 26 years working for the car companies in California, and I've worked very closely with the California Air Resources Board and with the states that adopt California's regulations. But before providing any more detailed comments, I'd just like to thank the NDEP staff. Throughout this process, they've been professional, transparent, open to concerns and recommendations from all the stakeholders. And as a result of their work and the work of our partners in the Nevada Clean Cars Coalition, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Nevada Franchise Auto Dealers Association, we support the changes that are proposed to these regulations. They provide appropriate onboarding, early credits, initial credits down the road. Car companies have made extraordinary progress reducing emissions from conventional vehicles. Gasoline cars today emit virtually no ozone-forming pollution. You can drive a new car 5,000 miles and produce less pollution than using a gas blower to blow the leaves out of your backyard. And just to be clear, because this question came up, the federal requirements and the California requirements are identical for ozone-forming emissions. We requested this over a decade ago. That's the way it is today. I suspect that's the way it's going to be in the future. These improvements to gasoline vehicles included much better catalytic converters, more precious metals, computer control of air, fuel, spark, things like that. However, the improvements were developed and implemented by automakers without the need for customers or others to make any changes. So I've said this is kind of like an individual sport. It's like golf, right? Just one person. Drivers get in, they start up, they drive off, and when they need to refuel, gas stations are ubiquitous. So that's the past, and it's the present, but it's not necessarily the future. The future is electrification. Electrifying the vehicle fleet is decidedly not an individual sport. It's a team sport. It's like baseball, right? The pitcher is important, but you can't win and you can't even play without a catcher, without a shortstop, without the outfield. Likewise, no one will buy a vehicle if they can't fuel it. So infrastructure is important. Everyone must be on the field. Everyone has to be playing together. And we all have different roles and responsibilities. Federal, state, local governments, automakers, dealers, utilities, builders, fleets, NGOs, and of course the customers. We will certainly get there, but if we want to get there quickly, if we want to meet the goals, the rollout has to be very well orchestrated. The regulations and the support measures such as incentives, infrastructure, building codes, fleet purchase requirements, they have to be synchronized to ensure that we accelerate the market to achieve the goals. For our part, automakers are absolutely committed to electrification. By 2025, automakers will spend over $330 billion developing, producing, promoting electric vehicles. And we expect to see over 130 different electric vehicle models in every shape and size, from small cars to large cars, pickups, minivans, SUVs. Every technology will be available, plug-in hybrid, battery, and, of course, fuel cell electric vehicles. These vehicles, they're reliable, they're safe, they're convenient, they're affordable, and they're particularly fun to drive. And that brings us to the regulations. We are pleased to support the changes here. They address the ZEV credits and provide for a smooth transition. Again, transforming the vehicle fleet is a team sport. We each have a role to play, and we have to work together. These regulations are just the first step. We have a lot of work to do, and we're pleased to be working together and teaming up with Nevada. Again, I'd like to thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions for Mr. Douglas? All right, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Douglas. Who's next?
Chair Porter, we would now move to Thad Karaski. Thad is the National Credit Trading and Intermountain West State Policy Lead public policy and business development for Tesla.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you. My name is Todd Karowski. I'm a senior manager on the policy and business development team at Tesla. I've been responsible for covering clean car policy for several years, and I just want to mention that, that Tesla is not a member company of the Alliance for Auto Innovation that prior speaker Steve Douglas had represented. But I am here happy to say that, and this is a rare occasion, I think, when it comes to clean car standards, when we're aligned in our support for the regulations that you're considering today. At our Gigafactory in Nevada, which created more than 14,000 direct jobs and many times that of supply chain and surrounding areas, Tesla employees produce the battery cells and the packs that go into our vehicles, Model 3 motors. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts, additional thoughts, and express Tesla's gratitude to Governor Sisolak for his leadership, to DCNR and NDEP and DMV leadership, and to NDEP staff for their incredible effort that's led to your consideration of the draft regulations you have before you. At the beginning of the meeting, NDEP explained the regulations in detail. I may touch upon some of those. You've heard from others about how the transportation sector is a major contributor to air quality problems in northern and southern Nevada and is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the state. Setting aside my thoughts for the folks who are suffering from the Condor fire. Clean car standards will reduce the dangerous air pollution and ensure that Nevadans will have greater access to cleaner zero-emission vehicles. When it comes to the zero-emission vehicle or ZEV regulation, as Nevada imports virtually all of its fuel from other places, from out of state, fully electric ZEVs will save money for households and businesses, and over time, keep billions of Nevadans' hard-earned dollars at home instead of being sent out of state in the form of gasoline purchases. My understanding is that you've been provided a packet of information containing all the background material and produced, and I'd like to highlight some of the information from the April 27th air quality impact analysis. And some of that has been presented today already. NDEP analysis showed that the year-over-year ZEV sales have increased in Nevada since 2017, total increasing over 3%. But what I found interesting about that presentation was that for model year 2020, if you're translating vehicle sales, that 3%, into 2020 credit requirements, the industry is nearly compliant with the standards for model year 2020 in Nevada already, hitting roughly 9.4% of the 9.5% credit requirement for 2020. And with all of the new model announcements and investment over the next few years coming from EV only as well as legacy automakers, you should feel confident that adopting ZEV will increase the diversity of ZEVs available within the state and lead to increased GHG reductions. And in order to ensure that automakers are incentivized to deliver those vehicles to ZEV regulation, 3 years of early action credit banking, which essentially incentivizes EV sales in Nevada by allowing manufacturers to earn credits for that initial compliance year, and therefore accelerating the transition. Now, depending upon each individual automaker's approach to compliance, early action can also lead to overcompliance, which in Tesla's view, that's a positive, as it means that electrification is taking place faster with then minimum compliance, leading to larger emission reductions across the entire new light fleet. Circling back to the initial credit banks, I know there have been a few questions on these, and while a more detailed conversation I'm sure will take place in the future, I want to mention that the proportional credit compliance flexibility or initial credits as they've been referred to, permit automakers to generate credits for vehicles that are delivered into California, not Nevada. I want to highlight this because beyond model year 2025, proportional credit use has the effect of reducing the number of actual vehicles or models available to Nevada consumers. Tesla supports effective policies that result in actual vehicle deliveries and emissions reductions. And while I share this and expect robust future conversations to ensure effective policies continue, I want to be clear that Tesla supports the adoption of the regulations you have in front of you. Lastly, while I have your ear, I want to highlight that the clean car regulations are really just two regulations, two policies that can lead to air quality improvements and GHG reductions. Currently at the federal level, the Biden infrastructure and reconciliation packages include a suite of supply and demand side policies helpful in reducing transportation emissions in the future. We're certainly hopeful that those packages are supported in some form. I bring this up because I want to suggest that Nevada, at the state level, also consider the adoption of California's advanced clean truck regulations and a clean fuel standard. The advanced clean truck regulations are similar to the ZEV light duty regulation, being a supply side regulation that focuses on larger vehicle classes outside of light duty vehicles. A clean fuel policy, on the other hand, for a state like Nevada, as I mentioned, which imports its liquid fuel supply, can provide a low-cost, market-based means that can provide additional demand-side support for further electrification and emissions reductions. So I won't delve into the details of either of those, but I thank you for the opportunity to present. I'm hopeful for your support of the clean cars regulations you have in front of you. Thank you for the time, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions from our members? Thank you, Mr. Corrado. How many more do you have for the stakeholder presentation?
Six more.
Six more. I'll tell you what, let's take a brief break, and we'll reconvene here at, let's do 11:25, so about like a 7-8 minute break.
All right. Andy McKay. Andy is the executive director of the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association.
I guess it's technically good afternoon, everybody. For the record, my name is Andrew McKay. I'm the executive director of the Nevada Franchised Auto Dealers Association. I will try to keep my remarks as brief as possible, but before I begin, I want to again, thank Mr. Kinder, Mr. Lovato, Mr. Goni, Sig, and the whole crew during this process over the last, I guess it's been approximately 18 months since we began with this. As alluded to by Mr. Douglas, this has been a very transparent and frankly collaborative process, and one in which many of our concerns have been addressed. And for that, I would be remiss if I didn't put that on the record and thank those individuals. And for those that I may have missed or forgot to mention, I apologize on that. We are the trade association that represents all of the new vehicle dealers, light vehicle, light-duty trucks, heavy-duty truck dealers in the state of Nevada. What does that mean? We're at the point of the spear of electrification of Nevada's fleet. To give you an idea in terms of our scope of what we do here in Nevada, in 2020, we sold approximately 220,000 vehicles to Nevada residents and out-of-state residents as well, and serviced over 2.5 million vehicles during that period of time. Simply put, electrification is here. It's growing, and we're excited to be part of it. Our dealer members are investing tens of thousands of dollars, oftentimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in infrastructure with respect to the servicing, charging, and selling of EVs that are coming down the pike. These rulemaking dockets are just one part of the overall recipe that you bake the cake in terms of electrification. It was alluded to earlier that Senate Bill 448 that was passed last legislative session, that's another component. $100 million in charging infrastructure is going to go a long ways in order to get the consumers to assuage the range anxiety that you see. Further, and I think the most important thing is product availability to our consumers, both here in Nevada and then our out-of-state customers as well. As alluded to by Mr. Douglas, our manufacturer partners are going to invest over one-third of $1 trillion in EV R&D within the next 4 years. Actually, even less than that, I should say. And what does that translate into? 18 new models this year, 34 next year, and over 100 by 2025. By bringing these vehicles to the market, you don't get people to adopt electric vehicles by simply passing something and hope that they adopt it. No, the manufacturers are going to present, or excuse me, they're going to manufacture and make available for purchase a wide range of vehicles that will be in every price range for our consumers. And that's important. And the reason why that's important to notate is Sig mentioned earlier, one of our concerns relative to electrification is cost and just general cost of the vehicle overall. Presently, right now, the cost of a new vehicle in the United States of America is now $41,000. To give you a perspective where that was as recently as June of this year, it's gone up approximately $2,700. Now, there's some very unique and extraneous circumstances that are occurring in the automotive market that probably everybody is aware of, from inventory crunches due to microchip shortages. But my point in that is that because of the innovation of our manufacturer partners, this adoption of these clean cars regulations are going to be able to be absorbed by the consumers, by the manufacturers, and us, the dealer members, who are ultimately responsible to move them back. I think, simply put, we are, to say we're excited for the electrification of Nevada's fleet is an understatement. As Mr. Douglas stated, the products that are coming down the pipe are exciting, they're innovative, and they are really fun to drive. And as we, the collective we in the automotive industry, get more vehicles on the road that are electrified, specifically in the light truck segment, compliance with the mandates are gonna be, frankly, I think, pretty easy to absorb. But it's important to note that that's not possible, in my humble opinion, without the crediting system that's going to be in place. That's going to make the transition into model year 2025 that much easier. And again, I thank the all of the stakeholders involved in this and recognizing that issue and providing it as part of the draft. In closing, and again, thank you to the committee for allowing me to speak on this issue. We're ready, we're excited, we're at the point of the spear on this new adventure. Where we are relative to electrification in 10 years, 15 years is anybody's guess, but I think it's pretty safe to say that when you look in terms of the product that is coming down the pipe that we're gonna be able to offer our consumers, we're seeing a transformative event in our industry, and we're really excited to be part of it. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time. Members of the commission, thank you for your time. And if you have any questions, I'm available to answer them. Thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. McKay. Yes, who's next?
Chair Porta, we will now move to Angie Dykema. Angie is the Nevada representative of SWEET.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today. I'm Angie Dykema, the Nevada representative for SWEET, the Southwest Energy Project. And today I am representing the members of the Nevada Clean Cars Coalition.
which includes more than 80 diverse organizations, including businesses, conservation groups, science and public health advocates, labor unions, local governments, and consumer advocates, who's going to support the benefits of clean car standards for Nevada. And next slide, please. Members of our coalition have actively participated throughout this rulemaking process, attending all of the listening sessions, submitting technical comments and letters of support, and participating in last month's public workshop. We'd like to again thank NDP for leading on this initiative and for the receptiveness they've shown to stakeholder comments on the crediting system, resulting in the unanimous support at the public workshop. Nevada will be the first state to adopt clean car standards with consensus amongst clean energy advocates and the auto industry, and can serve as a model for working together toward our future electrification of the transportation sector. Next slide, please. Our coalition also submitted a joint letter of support that includes more than 1,000 signatures from members of the public across the state who couldn't attend the hearing today, but are in strong support of the Clean Cars Nevada initiative. This program will make significant progress toward meeting our state's greenhouse gas reduction goals and improve air quality while providing consumers more choices and cost savings. We ask the Commission to approve the regulations before you today, and thank you again for your time.
Questions from our members? Seeing none, thank you, Mrs. Detmoff. Who's next, Jeff?
To report it, we will now move to Alfred Artis. Alfred is the policy is a policy analysis with Consumer Reports.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Excellent. Hi, my name is Alfred Artis, and I'm speaking on behalf of Consumer Reports in support of Nevada Clean Cars. Consumer Reports is an independent, nonprofit, 6 million member organization that works side by side with consumers for truth, transparency, and fairness in the marketplace. Based on our consumer research, we have no choice but to support the Nevada Clean Cars program, as it would give Nevada consumers more choices of fuel-efficient vehicles. This program will also make electric trucks, SUVs, and cars easier to find and buy at local auto dealers. Some might ask if consumers want fuel-efficient or electric trucks, SUVs, or cars. Well, our consumer data shows that almost 3 in 4 Nevada adults with driver's license have interest in buying or leasing an electric truck, SUV, or car in the future. This includes 37% of Nevadans who plan to or would consider purchasing or leasing an electric truck, SUV, or car. There are substantial consumer benefits to this program. The average light-duty electric car, truck, and SUV driver will spend 60% less to power their vehicle than the owner of a gas-powered vehicle. They'll also spend half as much to keep it maintained and repaired. There are just fewer parts. Owning an electric car, truck, or SUV will save the typical driver $6,000 to $10,000 over the lifetime of the vehicle compared to owning a comparable gas-powered car. The Nevada Clean Cars program will make accessing these benefits much easier by enabling the state to bring a greater variety of electric and more efficient vehicles to Nevada, including new pickup trucks, SUVs, and crossovers that will be released in the coming years, since Nevada seems to be a state where folks like their trucks. However, with limited choices, Nevada consumers are left with a couple of options that don't make the path to EV ownership easy. You can either leave the state and they can spend their dollars on an electric vehicle in neighboring California, or they could buy a pollution-emitting gas-powered vehicle that costs a lot more to maintain and repair over the lifetime of the car relative to an EV. Nevada car buyers should not have to cross state lines to find vehicles they're looking for, and local dealers shouldn't have to miss out on that business. Nevada's economy deserves this boost. Don't borrow benefits from California. We can have those benefits right here at home. And remember, just next model year, there will be more electric trucks and SUVs available. As for costs, experts expect the cost of electric cars to drop to be about the same as gasoline-powered cars by the middle of the decade, certainly by the end. In short, the cost will drop. And this is important because the secondary market for used vehicles is where 70% of consumers buy their vehicles. So adopting this rule now will cede the necessary market segment that we with new cars that will eventually become new used cars. So see, if you start early, you'll see results sooner. So because of these consumer and economic benefits, the report urges the members of the committee to vote in favor of the Nevada Clean Cars program. It will save Nevadans money and at the same time improve the economy and give better cars to consumers. Thank you for your time. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Artis. And full disclosure, I'm a subscriber to Consumer Report. So.
Well, thank you.
All right, Jeff.
All right, Chair Porta, we will now move to Elliot Malin. Elliot is the principal and president of EM Incorporated and will provide speaking for the Nevada Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association.
Thank you for that, Elliot Malin with the Nevada Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association. And we thank you for the inclusion and the opportunity to be heard and hear our concerns. We are largely neutral on this. We would like to draw back to a slide, which said Clean Cars Nevada Industry Concerns. We want to make sure that climate action is not solely focused on the industry, but that it has a broad market-based mechanisms to achieve greenhouse gas reductions, which we support. We have some environmental concern for lithium-ion batteries and associated emissions through their production and recycling. Luckily, in Nevada, we have a lot of that material to produce them here. And the other big concern for us is EV charging expansion around Nevada. It's great right now. We have the electric corridor throughout the state, but we would like to see the expansion, and this is goes beyond. But we want to see this expansion so that way it opens the door for more Nevadans to be able to try to traverse our state and be able to utilize the many resources around it. I would also like to point your attention to the fuelinstitute.org and their research. They have a lot of free information and plenty of info. And with that, that is all we have to say. And we thank you for the time and the opportunity.
Thank you. Questions of our members, Mr. Malin? Thank you, Mr. Malin.
All right.
Thank you.
Chair Porta, we will now move to Rudy Zamora. Rudy is the program director of Chispa Nevada at the League of Conservation Voters.
Awesome. Good afternoon. Thank you again. My name is Rudy Zamora, and I'm the program director for Chispa Nevada. We can go into the next slide. Just a little bit of background on what Chispa Nevada is. Chispa Nevada is a program of the League of Conservation Voters, and we're here to build the power of low-income Latinx families to achieve climate justice, community health, and environmental protection while insisting on accountability from polluters and decision-makers. Due to the decades of environmental injustices, low-income people of color in Nevada have disproportionately had to carry the burdens of air pollution, breathing dirty air that harms our health and raises our financial costs. With that, that's why our members care deeply about addressing equity and environmental justice as part of the solution to the climate crisis. And Chispa Nevada supports the Clean Car Initiative. Next slide, please. Nevada's Latinx community supports electric vehicles. As we heard earlier in the community, we've done a community survey that we conducted with 271 of our members in December of 2020, and two-thirds said they have considered buying an electric vehicle if it was in reach to them. The community sees electric vehicles as an opportunity to save money on gas and make an environmental-friendly choice, but they have questions about how and where they can charge their vehicles, as well as how to afford and maintain one. In addition, over 94% of our members said they want to see electric vehicle charging stations in our communities, and that's something that's going to be addressed thanks to SB 448. If I can go into the next slide. Public health and electric vehicles is something that is of importance to us. As I mentioned, communities of color are disproportionately affected by dirtier air. The most recent report card by the American Lung Association gave Clark County and Washoe County F's for their air quality when it comes to ozone pollution. That report also shows people of color are three times more likely to breathe the most polluted air. And the climate crisis is a public health crisis, and electric vehicle adoption in low-income and historically underserved communities will significantly change the impact of pollution in our communities. Next slide, please. We also want to address equity in Clean Cars Nevada. CHISO supports the shift towards zero-emission transportation, but EVs carry a high upfront cost and are largely unavailable in our communities. This is the case in Nevada and across the country, even when our communities face the worst consequences of pollution and climate change. As the state sets up Clean Cars Nevada program, the state Nevada must ensure that low-income families have the opportunity to purchase electric vehicles in the state, and ensuring that we have other opportunities like a used market of electric vehicles. We will not meet the ambitious goals of this program if EVs are inaccessible to Nevadans of all income levels. Again, that to us is the most important part. These are ambitious goals that we are setting, but if it's not available to communities like mine or people like myself, we will not be able to make meet that goal. Next slide. We've also made some recommendations. As you heard earlier, we were able to participate with NDEP and have a listening session, not only with our members, but with the community. So some of the things that we are recommending is providing financial assistance at the point of sale to help low-income Nevadans purchase electric vehicles or make upgrades to their current vehicles. The other one is develop an affordable used EV market and ensure all vehicle options are sold in the state. Again, we've heard this multiple times in today's presentation where Nevadans have to go across state lines to buy electric vehicles. Not only are they not affordable and we don't have an EV used market here in the state, but we have to go elsewhere. So ensuring that we have that here is going to be helpful. Support the availability of charging infrastructure in low-income communities of color. Again, that's something that is already in the way thanks to SB 448. Next slide, please. And then we have three more recommendations. Encouraging local government fleets to deploy EVs in low-income communities. This can be in the form of electric school buses, electric trucks, municipal fleets, or public transit. When our community sees EVs in our communities, we're going to start asking questions. We're going to be encouraged to purchase those vehicles. But at the moment, it's something that we are not seeing in public transit. We're not seeing it at school buses. We're not seeing on a day-to-day. So it still seems a little bit far off for us. And then the last two that we have is invest in building community awareness about electric vehicles. The state must develop a culturally and linguistically competent outreach program to educate the Latinx community. And then finally, address the impacts of mining on local ecosystems. As the state encourages lithium mining to meet state and regional climate goals, it must also hold mining companies accountable for the environmental impacts of their operations. Next slide. And that's all I have. If anyone has any questions, I can take them.
Questions for Mr. Zamora? All right,
yes.
Seeing none, thank you. Jeff, who's next?
All right, Chair Porta, we will finish our presentations with Marie Steele. Marie is the Electrification Director at NV Energy.
Good afternoon, Marie Steele for the record. Like I said, Electrification Director for NV Energy. Are my slides up, Jeff?
They're coming.
Okay. So we are here in support of today's regulatory petition in front of you, and thank you for your time. I will keep it short, just as we've talked about in many analogies through here. Many players are required for this to happen, and NV Energy has long supported electric vehicle adoption and looks forward to our increased participation in accelerating transportation electrification. So just so you know, we have existing programs. I'm only seeing the cover slide. But like we've talked about today and some of the commissioners' questions, we do have current electric vehicle incentives, whether that is residential, multifamily, or lower-income multifamily, and a host of incentives as well for commercial participation, whether that's fleet, public, or workplace adoption. Another one just to talk about, a new one that will be active in January of 2022, is a lower income electric vehicle incentive. That's not a charger incentive. It's for the vehicle or new or used vehicles up to for $2,500 to help support low-income customers to access the electric vehicle market, you know, as Rudy just spoke about, the focus on historically underserved communities. So this is our current incentive program, but I think as everyone has talked about, there is, with Senate Bill 448, there will be new programs in the future. I'm very excited to say the $100 million economic recovery plan we will be filing today and look forward to the continued participation to advance transportation electrification. And then as well, we will have an additional filing in September of 2022 for continued program development to support transportation electrification in the future. So just wanted to make sure that the commission was well aware that NV Energy is here to support the advancement of transportation electrification for all customers, and especially with a focus on historically underserved communities. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer it.
Questions from the field? I have one. With regard to the future of EVs, it's more vehicles down the road, 10, 15, 20 years. Has NV Energy's plans taken into account the additional need for generation or support of these vehicles with regard to, you know, power?
Yes. So electric vehicles are part of our integrated resource planning. So we have electric vehicle load as part of the supply that we plan for. As well, from a distribution perspective and the investments there, we have programs and systems in place to make sure that electric vehicles are a flexible load, so that doesn't put an additional strain on our distribution grid. So long answer, but yes, this is part of our massive integrated and distributed resource planning. So we are ready.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions from the field? Thank you. All right, Jeff, does that conclude the stakeholder presentation?
Yes, it does.
Okay. All right, so we're moving on to public comment. I'm assuming we have a number of people who wish to comment. I would ask that those who provide comments, the first, issue would be state your name slowly, and then if you would please spell your name for the record. That would be immensely helpful for our recording and for our minutes. And secondly, I would like to limit the number of minutes to public comment to 2 minutes per person. If you need additional time, please inform me prior to your comments, and we'll see if we can accommodate that. But otherwise, please try to keep your comments to 2 minutes or less. Oh, I'm sorry. 3 minutes was agendized, not two. Sorry about that. So if you need more than 3 minutes, please let me know, and we will decide upon your request. So with that, Stephanie, you want to open the line for public comment?
Yes, Chairman, thank you. If you have used the life-size application and would like to make a public comment at this time, I'd like to ask you to use the raise hand feature, and we will call your name out as we see your hand is raised, and once you speak, we would like you to lower your hand, but we know you've had your opportunity. So with that being said, I'm looking for hands to be raised.
Stephanie? Sorry. I just had a quick housekeeping. Sorry, Greg Lovato for the record. I've learned that there's some folks on the line who might be using the chat function, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I've heard from other folks that, you know, how are we handling that today if we want to let folks know? I think what we're saying right now is if you are plugged into life-size video to use the raise hand function. And then do we want to make a comment about, are we keeping the chat? Is that part of the minutes? Or will the chat be preserved as part of the record? I just wanted to, people who are using the chat function, wanted them to know how we're using that today and how that differs from being able to make public comments. So,
Joe Ferrer, for the record, the chat function is actually disabled for this meeting. So there's nobody sending me any messages through the life-size.
Okay. I heard from someone that they were using the chat function online.
I can't see it.
Okay. Okay, so if you are using the chat function and you're online, it's not being recorded, and the way to communicate with us would be to use the raise hand function, and then we'll be also, opening up phone lines at some point after we...
Yes,
okay.
That's my intent.
Okay.
Once we get through the raise hand feature, okay, life size, then we'll proceed to the phone numbers, which I will then call out by the last four digits.
Okay, sorry for the interruption.
Yeah, no worries. And I have one last comment, too, for our public. Please try not to be repetitive. If we've heard the comment, you know, a number of times, just indicate you support that. We're going into detail. Much appreciated. All right, let's move forward.
Okay, we would like to call Peter Chipman to make his public comment.
Peter Chipman, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Peter Chipman, Chipman spelled as potato chip, C-H-I-P-M-A-N. I'm the Senior Director of Policy for Plug in America. We represent, we're in support of today's Clean Car Nevada standards. We're consumer advocates of over 2 million electric vehicle drivers in America, which over 11,000 are registered in Nevada. Plug in America strongly supports the SEC's efforts to accelerate adoption of electric vehicles in the state by adopting rules that will give all Nevadans more freedom to choose from the growing list and affordability of electric vehicles available from auto manufacturers. Consumers want electric vehicles because they offer low fuel and maintenance costs, a better driving experience, and cleaner air. However, far too often, they cannot access the more than 50 models of EVs available across the U.S. and growing. These clean car standards will help ensure that citizens of the state can find the best EV for their family and confidently transition to driving electric. The move will also reduce the air pollution that all Nevadans breathe, improve public health, and create good jobs in the manufacturing industry sectors. We'd also like to say that the timing of the clean car standards in the state couldn't be more critical in terms of potentially historic levels of federal funding being negotiated now in Congress. The more the state is structurally ready for EVs, the more the impact of increased federal funding for EV infrastructure and EV adoption will have in advancing the benefits of clean transportation for all Nevadans. And just a couple quick comments based on the first presentation and a couple other commenters. For the small business concerns for dealers, we do have a Plug Star program that kind of facilitates dealer training as well as consumer education, and we have a lot of technical help in that area. We're more than happy to help in that area for dealers making the transition. And I want to echo Consumer Reports and Chief of Nevada on really, you know, I know it's hard to sort of imagine affordable EVs for low and middle income purchasers, but really getting that market going, it will start to get a robust used market. So we really fully support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chipman. And I'll just note that we did receive a letter from your executive director, Mr. Levin. We have that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next in line is Travis Madsen.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Travis Madsen, that's M-A-D-S-E-N. I'm a transportation program director at the Southwest Energy Efficiency Project, a nonprofit organization working to save energy and reduce pollution across 5 southwestern states. We wholeheartedly support the regulations before you today, and we urge you to vote yes. Adopting clean car standards is one of the most important actions Nevada can take right now to improve the energy efficiency of the state economy. As I documented in a report that I submitted before the hearing, we found on the order of $20 billion in benefits that would result from electrifying light-duty vehicles in line with Nevada's climate action plan. And adopting the rules before you today will go a long way to help unlock those benefits. Thanks to Governor Sisolak for initiating this process, to the staff at the Nevada Department of Environmental Protection for all their work on this regulation, and in particular to all the other stakeholders for open, respectful, and very productive dialogue throughout the rule development process. I look forward to working with all of you to make the program a success. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Madsen, and we do have your letter as well.
Okay, so the next person in line then would be Noah Howe. If you could speak.
Great. Thank you so much. Hello. My name is Noah Howe, and I'm the manager on the transportation team at Ceres. I believe several of you received a letter from my colleague, Jennifer Helfrich, yesterday. Ceres coordinates multiple networks of influential investors, Fortune 500 companies, and consumer-facing brands that are embracing a sustainable future. This includes our Bicep Network, a coalition of more than 70 businesses, many of whom have substantial operations or are headquartered in Nevada, as well as the Corporate Electric Vehicle Alliance, or SEVA, a collaboration of 26 companies, including Amazon, DHL, IKEA, and others, looking to decarbonize and to electrify their fleets. This week, we shared a letter with the commission from 12 businesses with operations or businesses in Nevada, including Dignity Health, IKEA, Lyft, Patagonia, REI, and Uber, expressing support for the adoption of the Clean Cars program. Clean car standards are an important tool for our corporate partners and the business community to cut costs while making progress towards their sustainability goals. The deployment of clean vehicles allows businesses to create fuel cost and maintenance savings, and to minimize the risks associated with fuel price, maintenance downtime, and supply volatility. These benefits also extend to their employees and customers. Clean vehicle standards will also support broader economic development, keeping money in state rather than sending money out of state on fuel costs. It will also support jobs along the EV supply chain. The ZEV program in particular is an effective tool for ensuring that all Nevadans have access to clean vehicles, as many automakers currently selectively deploy or focus sales of certain vehicle models on states with ZEV in place. For all of these reasons, we strongly support the adoption of clean car standards in Nevada. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And Stephanie, do we have their letter that you mentioned?
I don't recall seeing that one.
Okay.
I think that might have been one that went directly to the
commission. Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. We'll make sure we get it right.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Moving on. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Howell.
So the next person in line is Sarah Steinberg.
Good afternoon. You don't hear me. All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Sarah Steinberg. That's S-A-R-A-H-S-T-E-I-N-B-E-R-G. And I'm a principal with Advanced Energy Economy, which is a national association of businesses working to advance policies that make the energy we use more reliable, secure, clean, and affordable. Our membership includes companies that manufacture, develop, and purchase advanced vehicle technologies and their charging components. So today I would like to express AWE's strong support for Nevada's progress on adopting clean car standards. They are critical foundational regulations to increase electric vehicle adoption and achieve Nevada's statutory emissions goals. And they complement recent legislative efforts to expand access to electric vehicle charging across all communities. The regulations will be good for Nevada consumers, the Nevada economy, and local communities by spurring job creation of new infrastructure jobs. The advanced vehicle sector has strong potential, already employing over 1,300 Nevadans with expected growth in 2021, and the regulations will also generate millions in new private investment opportunities. Greater EV adoption will lower driver and business refueling costs, as electricity prices are highly stable and lower per gallon than gasoline or diesel. And additionally, increased electric vehicle charging can put downward pressure on electricity rates to the benefit of all utility customers, regardless of whether or not they drive an electric vehicle. So as has been mentioned, importantly, these regulations will expand consumer choice. Today, the dealership stock of electric car models is severely limited, and that is limiting what Nevada drivers and businesses can choose. But over the next several years, we expect over 70 new EV makes and models to become available, and Nevadans deserve access to that growing market. So thank you for your time. AWE looks forward to continued progress towards adopting these regulations that support the state's vision for a clean, modern transportation future. I do want to note that I also did submit some written comments a few weeks ago on behalf of AWE, and I didn't hear that confirmed today, so I'd be happy to resubmit that if that would be helpful.
Did we receive those, Stephanie?
I don't.
If you wouldn't mind, Ms. Steinberg, if you could submit those to our executive secretary for the record, that's great.
Sure thing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so next in line is Bethany Kahn.
Good afternoon. I'm Bethany Kahn, and I'm a proud owner of an all-electric EV. I urge this commission to vote in favor of the Nevada Clean Standards today to public health is crucial. I noticed before I bought my EV, each time I stopped to pump gas, I would get a headache and quickly realized that gasoline fumes triggered the migraines. Not only that, after moving to Nevada almost 10 years ago, my asthma symptoms have gotten worse, and especially now as the fires and smoke are really triggering my asthma. We must act now. Climate change is making the wildfires worse. It's dire, and as Nevadans, I would like our leaders to move quickly and urgently to address this crisis. There are some barriers to buying an EV right now in Nevada. Availability and price are just two of them. Clean car standards will bring more EV options for sale in Nevada. These cars will eventually be purchased and then sold used or certified pre-owned, opening up the used EV market and making it possible for low and middle income EV buyers like me to find a car in that price range. I was in a recent car accident that totaled my old fuel car, so I took that opportunity to find a car that was more aligned with my values. The problem was that almost no one, including most dealers, knew anything about them, and none of my friends or coworkers had an EV, so I had to spend a lot of time and research trying to figure out what was best for me. So it took me 4 months to find the right EV for me, and eventually I had to ship my EV from California, which is an added expense for most buyers and can be a missed opportunity for the local dealership. In addition to clean car standards, I challenge Nevada's leaders to secure purchase incentives that make it accessible and affordable for Black and Brown communities to buy new or used EVs. I made an intentional decision to move completely away from fossil fuels because I wanted to do my part for the environment, but my part is just a small piece of the puzzle. What you and your colleagues decide today will have a big impact for all Nevadans now and in the future. I submitted more detailed comments by email, so I'll close by urging the Nevada State Environmental Commission to vote yes to protect Nevadans and to pass the clean car standards today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kahn, and we do have your email that you submitted.
Okay, the next person in life size is Cynthia Moore.
Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. My name is Cynthia Moore, and I'm the Las Vegas field organizer for Moms Clean Air Force and National Lead for Ecomadres. Moms Clean Air Force is an organization of over 1.5 million moms and dads nationwide, with over 8,000 of those members in Nevada fighting for clean air. As we can see, uncontrollable wildfires made worse by climate change have led to very unhealthy air quality in Nevada. It's hurting our most vulnerable people, children, the elderly, and anyone with underlying health conditions. As a mother of a four-year-old, that's concerning to me. And Latino children are 60% more at risk of having asthma attacks exacerbated by air pollution and 40% more likely to die from an asthma attack. Efforts to improve our air quality are particularly important to me as a mother of a four-year-old that has breathing problems and the parents of over 40,000 children who have asthma in Clark County. That's why Nevada's leaders must work to reduce air pollution from sources we can control, like tailpipes. Improving our air quality is an environmental justice issue. Everyone has the right to breathe clean air. We must do everything we can to protect our families from the climate crisis. I urge you to vote yes today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore, and nice job on the multitasking there. And just a reminder for those commenting, please spell your last name when you begin to comment. Appreciate it.
Okay, the next person in line is Christy Cabrera. I hope I said that right.
Hi, yes, good morning. Thank you, Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Christy Cabrera, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-C-A-B-R-E-R-A, and I'm the Policy and Advocacy Director for the Nevada Conservation League. The Nevada Conservation League would like to voice our strong support for Nevada's Clean Cars Initiative. Transportation is the largest emitter of greenhouse gas pollution in our state, and our health, economy, and environment all suffer as a result. By putting more fuel-efficient cars on our roads, we can reduce harmful air pollution linked to asthma and other ailments that impact Nevadans while helping our state meet its climate goals and investing in our local clean energy economy. We are grateful and applaud Governor Sisolak and the Division of Environmental Protection for making strides to make Nevada a clean car state. These protections will help defend the health of our friends, family, and neighbors while giving Nevadans access to the clean cars they want and continuing our fight against climate change. It's time that we take action on air pollution, climate change, and consumer choice and adopt the clean car standards. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. And we also have a letter from your executive director, Paul Silber, for the file.
Okay. Moving on, the next person is Matt Rubin. Looks like maybe Matt changed his mind.
Okay.
So we will move on to the next person. Leslie Mujica.
Good morning. My name is Leslie Mujica, L-E-S-L-I-E, last name M-U-J-I-C-A. I am the executive director of Las Vegas Power Professionals, Powering Nevada. I represent IBEW 357 and Southern Nevada NECA, which is the electrical union. We are members of the Nevada Clean Cars Nevada, and we are in full support of these standards. And throughout the presentation today, I did hear that charging station infrastructure is a concern, and I wanted to share with you that we have the trained and certified workforce ready to install safely and properly the electric vehicle infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next person then is Leonard Jackson.
Yes, and thank you very much for allowing us to gather here today. My name is Reverend Leonard Jackson, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N. And I am the executive director of the Faith Organizing Alliance. And I did submit an email with acknowledgement and receipt, so I will be brief. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to provide public comment on Clean Cars Nevada. Our organization strongly supports these regulations because the program will reduce harmful air pollution, help us meet our climate goals, and greatly increase consumer choice and access. I ask every member of the commission to please vote in favor of this today, because this will put us where we belong, number one in the energy field in this country. So let's move on up a little higher. Vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. And we do have your email that you submitted.
Okay, moving on. The next person would be Simon Wee.
Good morning, Chair Forda, members of the commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm Simon Mui, last name spelled M-U-I. I serve as the deputy director of the Clean Vehicles and Fuels Group at Natural Resources Defense Council. We're a national conservation and environmental group with 3 million members and online engagers across the country, including in Nevada. We strongly support NDEP's proposal, and we thank NDEP for their public stakeholder engagement really over the past year and a half. I've worked in the transportation and air pollution space for the past 2 decades, and it's perhaps the first time I've seen environmental groups, automakers, auto dealers, and the state agency come together like this to address major concerns on vehicle emission standards like NDEP has, such that folks are all either comfortable or supportive of where it's at. NDEP has been very thoughtful in its process and development of the rule, including providing early credits for that transition, but also providing more certainty on how it will move forward and handle future updates to the rule as it increases. All of us are seeing Nevada and other states throughout the West suffer from extreme temperature fatigue, wildfires, droughts due to climate change. This rulemaking is a really critical step to begin addressing those pollutants that are responsible for impacting the way of life across all of our communities. The good news is that automakers do have pollution-free vehicles. They're making attractive cars, SUVs, trucks that happen to be pollution-free. zero emission vehicles are here today. The costs are coming down and it will save households money, as NDEP has shown, while protecting our public health and our climate. It's a win-win-win. We know this is just the first step. More complementary policies will be needed, as others have attested to, charging infrastructure is also on the way, with the Public Utility Commission of Nevada also set to hear utility proposals to invest up to $100 million over the next 3 years to enable even more EV charging stations to be deployed, including in underserved communities. With your iVote today, we will have cleaner and zero-emission cars delivered to the state as well, together with the charging infrastructure deployments. Thank you, and I urge for your iVote. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, moving on now, we'll start calling out the last four digits of the numbers that have called in. And when we do so, if you could please state your name and spell it for the record, then you can record your call. So the first one will be ending in 7970. You're calling in from number phone number ending in 7970. Your mic should be unmuted and you can provide comment if you wish to do so. Okay, hearing none.
Did you originally call Matt Rubin?
Yes. Let's go ahead and Matt, if you can, would you like to go ahead and provide public comment? We see that you're able to come back in. We can unmute your microphone.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
There you are.
Oh, great. Fantastic. I was having some technical issues earlier.
Thank you, Matt. If you could state your name and spell it for the record, we'll listen to your comment.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Matt Rubin, MATTRUBIN. I'm based here in Reno. I'm a clean energy program analyst with Western Resource Advocates. WRA advocates for policies that protect Western lands, ensure sustainable water practices, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions that drive the climate crisis so that communities in our region can thrive and handle nature. I won't spend time repeating what the other commenters have said already, but I will highlight that Zeb in particular is critical to achieving Nevada's emission reduction goals, such as those laid out in SB 254 from the 2019 session. That includes a 45% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2030 and achieving net zero emissions by mid-century. I urge you all to approve the permanent regulatory petition R093-20. Thank you. And one last thing that I will mention is that last week I did send an email of support for these regulations to both Commissioners Landreth and Torres, and I did not hear WRA's name, so I just wanted to make sure that we were on record that we submitted those comments.
Okay. We did receive those, Mr. Rubin. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, moving on, looking at the next phone number. That number is 3202. If you've called in with that phone number, it's 3202, and would like to make public comment, state your name and spell it so that we may hear that. Okay, hearing none on that, we will move on to the next one. Yeah. 7397. We will unmute your mic, and if you could state your name and spell it, we will hear your comment. All right, hearing none, we'll move on. 1059. If you're calling from 1059, state your name and spell it so we may hear your comment if you have one. Okay. I think hearing none, Mr. Chairman, that ends our
very good.
Comment.
Very good. I will ask the members at this time. We have gone through the DEP presentation, the stakeholders presentation, and the public comment. 20 after, what would be your preference? I'm in favor of moving forward versus taking a lunch break. I think you prove I see a lot of head nodding yes. How about folks online there? Jocelyn, Catherine, Casey, thumbs
yeah.
up? Okay, very good. We will move forward.
But Mr. Chairman, would you like me to read out the letters of support
yes,
before we do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. We received
okay.
a number of letters from various organizations and entities, and I want to make sure that they get into the record. And so, yeah, Stephanie, maybe read the date and who the organization is.
Okay. I don't have a list of the dates.
Oh, okay.
I do have a list of the organizations that sent them.
Okay.
We did receive a letter from the Department of Motor Vehicles. We received a letter from the Southwest Energy Efficiency Project, the Nevada Clean Cars Coalition, Plug In America, which included a list of supporters that signed a petition, the Washoe County Air Quality, She's by Nevada Clean Cars, the Nevada Conservation League, electric vehicle owner Bethany Kahn, Baby Town Office, Clark County, a letter from Ann Silver of the Reno Sparks Chamber, the email from Reverend Leonard Jackson, a letter of support from the Mormon Women for Ethical Government in Nevada, and finally the Department of Health and Human Services, the Nevada Department of Health and Human Services. And those were all letters of support. And I will be asking the commissioners to provide any additional letters that they received individually to me so that we can contain that in the record.
Okay, we do have one letter in opposition, Stephanie, and maybe you could read that one into the record for us from Beatty.
From Beatty?
Yeah. The Beatty Town Advisory Board dated August 30th, 2021.
Yes, I see that letter here.
Okay.
You'd like me to read it into the record?
Yes, why don't we do that for that one?
Okay. This is from the Beatty Town Advisory Board, addressed to the Nevada State Environmental Commission, dated August 30th, 2021, concerning permanent regulatory petition R093-20, the Bureau of Air Quality Planning, Low and Zero Emission Vehicle Standards. This regulation includes changes in A, the California Low Emission Vehicle Standards for exhaust emissions and fuel evaporative emissions of criteria pollutants and greenhouse gases from mobile internal combustion engines found in new light-duty and medium-duty motor vehicles sold in Nevada starting from model year 2025. B, the California Zero Emission Vehicle Program, starting with sales of model year 2025 vehicles. The ZEV program requires the automobile manufacturers earn a specified percentage of credits that are related to delivery for sale. The proposed revisions include creating a new subsection for the LEV and ZEV programs under the emissions from engines section. The subsection includes general provisions, definitions, severability adoption of California Administrative Code by reference, LEV program provisions, and ZEV program provisions, warranty and recall provisions, and civil penalties. On Monday, August 23, 2021, the Beatty Town Advisory Board and the residents of the town met and discussed the permanent regulatory petition R093-20. For Bureau of Air Quality Planning, low and zero emission vehicle standards being proposed by NDEP to amend NAC Chapter 445B. These comments express their views on this matter and are supported by the advisory board. We support clean car initiatives, eliminating greenhouse gases and lowering vehicle emissions as a whole, but cannot support the proposed amendments. Nevada is a diverse state. Each region, county, city, town, and township as different and unique as the geography where they are located. Nevada and California are two very different states by many metrics, including population, geography, and demographics. Forcing Nevadans to conform to a one-size-fits-all policy from another state is not practical or fair. Experience has shown us that this doesn't work for us on a county level and could have many negative consequences for our state and people. While these standards may fit California and its much larger concentrated population centers, they will not work for much of Nevada, especially the rural parts of the state. Residents in the rural Nevada must travel long distances for many essential services. Electric vehicles, even hybrids, are not yet capable of traversing the many miles necessary without many stops along the way for charging or fuel. It is proposed that starting in 2025, new light-duty or medium-duty motor vehicles sold in Nevada meet the California standards. While many of us would like to purchase a new vehicle with lower emissions and better fuel mileage, most of us would not be able to afford one. Forcing this requirement on Nevadans puts a financial burden on those who are already struggling. 20% of Beatty's population lives at the poverty level. We urge the commission to deny this petition until the problems with distance and price can be resolved equitably. The state should draft its own policy and one that takes into account the distances, economy, and financial situation of those of us living in rural Nevada. From Randy Reed, Beatty Town Advisory Board Chair.
Thank you, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that concludes all the
letters. That concludes all the letters.
Okay.
And my apologies, I didn't realize that that was my opposition.
Yeah, no worries. Well, I'm glad we have it in the record. At this point, I guess I will close public comment and bring it back to the commission members for discussion and or questions that we may have of the division or others who spoke. A bit of silence. Go ahead, Catherine.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say that I think we all are sensitive to some of the potential challenges that this regulation can bring for people in rural areas and people with lower incomes, and we really won't know how things play out until this rule is promulgated. I am hopeful, and I can even say confident, that the other agencies that have a part in the Clean Air Initiative will be sensitive to this too and be keeping in mind the needs of our rural communities and our lower income people and make the appropriate ways to help fix that if necessary.
Yes, I completely agree, Catherine. I think we've heard it multiple times here about disadvantaged communities, lower income areas, would need some type of assistance. And it sounded like from the presentations that we heard, there are a number of things in the work already to help with assistance, rural areas, including charging stations throughout the state. Those balls, I think, are already rolling, and hopefully will continue to do so. So definitely echo your comments, Catherine. Thank you. Anyone else?
Just a comment.
Sure. Good. Mike, go ahead.
Mike Vischer, for the record. I just want to commend NDEP for the admirable job you did on this. This is a massive undertaking. And I understand and appreciate the amount of work that was in front of you to go through this process. Very lengthy process. I think the engagement opportunities that you provided and the feedback and how you responded to those was really well done. Thank you for all your work and efforts.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. And I think this is about the first time the division's been in unison or in agreement with NRDC, which is, I think that's one of the first I've probably heard of or seen of. So that's definitely worth noting. Okay, any other questions, concerns, comments from the commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, this is Tony Wasley from the Department of Wildlife.
Yeah, Tony, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Well, thank you. I wanted to echo some of the sentiments, hugely appreciative and really want to commend, all the partners, all the stakeholders. I've been on this commission for 8.5 years now, typically pretty quiet, sitting back listening to the discourse. It isn't an area. A lot of what this commission and these agencies deal with doesn't land squarely in an area that's covered under the jurisdictional authorities of the state's Department of Wildlife. I think this is a really exciting, important, overdue discussion to have, and we've heard many of the benefits, we've addressed some of those challenges as well. And I just want to, I don't want to appear to be a wet blanket at all. I just want to have full disclosure on some of the hidden challenges that, from a wildlife side of things, that we may face, and I just want to create some awareness, eyes wide open. And my agency here at the Nevada Department of Wildlife have responsibilities in providing comments to our land management agencies relative to the potential impacts of projects on the landscape. And we talk about energy needs and what that means with coal-fired power plants or dams for hydroelectric or solar arrays or wind power or lithium. And as we talk about these clean energy vehicles, and we talk about all those benefits in terms of air quality and emissions, we also have to acknowledge that the primary source of power for these vehicles is a battery that's powered by lithium. Part of the reason that the cost of that liquefied fuel is so great is because it's being produced elsewhere and it has to be trucked to Nevada for use. And we have some very real, meaningful opportunity and potential for the lithium resource right here in Nevada. And we could talk at great length about some of the impacts to wildlife from wind energy and solar energy and some of the really unique, innovative ways that industry has modified their features, the use of LIDAR, for example, to detect an outflight of 1 million bats to have a cut in speed of wind turbines. And so I just want to acknowledge, we talk about clean air, we talk about clean water. Lithium is essential, and there's a lot of different ways and means to extract it, but I really want to avoid the binary bias of it's either clean air or wildlife habitat. The benefits are of electric vehicles are meaningful, and they're needed, but we must not trade air quality and emissions for habitat loss, habitat fragmentation, only shifting those impacts. We can and should do both. We can have both clean vehicles, clean air, and intact and functional wildlife habitats. And so I know there aren't a tremendous number of wildlife advocates or at least those with statutory responsibilities on this commission or on this call even, but we would be naive to not be not acknowledge that there are some challenges as we try to shift our source of power and energy. And I just want us to avoid that trap of a binary bias and saying one or the other because we can and should do both. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Tony. And those are very good points. It kind of goes back to my question about ZEVs are not totally zero-emission vehicles. There is an impact. And hopefully as we move forward, this is just the first step. As we move forward, more of these impacts will be better defined, especially if we move with a second part of these sets of regulations in the future. So, with that in mind, are there any other questions, concerns, or comments by the commission members?
I guess I'd like to make just one additional comment. Jocelyn Torres, for the record. I think, you know, this being my second meeting on the commission, last time we heard more presentations about, you know, folks who sometimes are not in compliance with air quality. And what I heard specifically from the county presentations is that we're close to being non-compliant, right, where we need to be on some of these standards. And so there's, I think, a balance there to what Director Wadley was saying earlier, right, that we need to move forward in meeting some of these air quality goals, but also being very aware that this needs to be a balanced and thoughtful approach. And I really appreciate that there was a lot of staff work into trying to find that balance, and definitely a lot of community participation, I think, trying to bring solutions and working together. So I think that we're on the right track, probably, of where we're going to need to be to really pull this off holistically in our community.
Great. Thank you, Jocelyn.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead, Catherine.
Mr. Catherine, again, I just want to second what Commissioner Bosley said. You really aren't alone on this commission. I can't speak for everybody, but certainly as the environmental representative and someone who's worked on behalf of the environment for, gosh, about 25 years, I am concerned, too, about the impact on wildlife, and we cannot discount or dismiss the fact that everything has trade-offs and costs. And I, too, would like to just commend everybody who's been involved in this. This is just amazing to me.
Yeah.
But it came together so fast with so much support and agreement.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Any other members, questions, comments? All right, well, we'll come to the point where I'll open it up for a motion by a member.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to approve and adopt permanent regulatory petition R093-20 as proposed.
Okay, Jason has moved for the approval. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any discussion? All right, seeing none, I will call for the vote, but I would like to do this individually since we have some members here as Stephanie, so if you could call each commission member for their vote, and that way okay. It's a little better since we have both people participating online and here.
All right. Chairman Porter, are you in favor?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jason King, are you in favor?
Yes.
Commissioner Casey, are you in favor?
Yes.
Commissioner Jennifer Ott, are you in favor?
She's still with us.
Yes.
Commissioner Michael Vischer, are you in favor?
Yes.
Commissioner Tony Wosley, are you in favor?
Yes.
Commissioner Adam Sullivan, are you in favor?
Yes.
Commissioner Catherine Landreth, are you in favor?
Yes.
And Commissioner Jocelyn Torres, are you in favor?
Yes.
Well, it's unanimous. The approval of regulatory petition R093-20 is by approved by the committee. All right. I guess we're ready to move on to agenda item number 5. We'll hear from Greg with the administrator's briefing.
Thanks, Commissioner Porta, members of the commission. I'll be pretty brief. So I just wanted to highlight some of the changes. We had to call in some reinforcements as people have retired, and so that affects the staff that are supporting the State Environmental Commission. I want to thank Stephanie Simpson for stepping in after Val King retired and acting as acting executive secretary. We have backfilled Val King's position as Chief of Bureau Administrative Services, and our going forward, our Executive Secretary will be Cheryl Fontaine, who's here today. Cheryl comes from our Air Quality Planning Bureau, and we're really excited to bring her aboard. And as I mentioned last time, Lisa Kramer, Chief of our Bureau of Air Pollution Control, is retired, and she's been replaced by Jennifer Schumacher. So we're happy to have those folks aboard. Also on the SEC, we also have Jessica Higday, who's here today, and she'll be the recording secretary going forward. And so we're happy to bring everyone, and just wanted to let everyone know about those changes. So I have a couple of other updates, and this is just giving the commission a preview of some of the future challenges. I think, you know, these probably aren't going to be as ambitious as Clean Cars Nevada, but I think we're seeing, you know, just, you know, the challenges we're dealing with environmentally and if we're going to make improvements are a bit more complex than they were in the past. And so they do involve, you know, a lot more stakeholder outreach, a lot more engagement to make sure that we can address concerns up front. And two of the upcoming regulatory initiatives that we have in place, or I'm sorry, that we're working on right now, we're starting the informal outreach process, is to revise our water quality regulations to make our implementation of anti-degradation standards in Nevada more consistent across our permitting regime. And so we're engaging in informal outreach starting tomorrow and this month, and we're anticipating bringing that regulatory petition before the commission in December. And another regulatory outreach effort we're engaged in is to implement regulations concerning preventing granting of reclamation permits to what were termed in Assembly Bill 148 that was passed this session, bad actors. And so we're starting that outreach effort this month as well, and we anticipate bringing that petition before the commission in February. That law was passed this legislative session, Assembly Bill 148, and it's expected to take effect in April of 2022. So we want to have the regulation ahead of time. And so we'll be engaging in outreach on those and make sure that we address concerns ahead of time. And with that, I'm open for any questions. That concludes my briefing.
Any questions for Greg? All right, thank you, Greg. Moving on to agenda item number 6, we'll once again open it up for public comment. Now is the time. If anybody else would like to make additional public comments, now is the time to do so. If you have anybody's hands raised online, let us know. Stephanie?
It does not appear that anybody has their hands raised.
Okay. And nobody in the room here appears to be having their hands raised, so give us just a minute here.
We have one caller still left. If you are calling in from
just get your answer.
I think we're good.
That's a good period to the end public comment period. All right, very good. So the last thing is adjournment. Thank you, everyone, for participating. This was, especially the division, was obviously a Herculean effort to get this, all the stakeholders on board, and job well done. We're adjourned.